All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. All right.
Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Or I should say good evening, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m., 11 to 4 a.m. every week night here on WGN. And we got a fun show worked out for you this morning. Ian Schur is going to join us. He's from CNET.com. He's an editor-at-large at CNET.com. And we got a lot of tech stuff to talk about. And that's when he's here, we always talk tech. And we're going to do like a year-end. They did the top tech of 2019. The year that tech couldn't stop screwing up was the year of 2019. Some of the most important apps of the decade. Ton of stuff to talk about at the end of this year and at the end of the decade. With Ian Schur. Ian, of course, you can follow on Twitter at Ian Schur, and it's S-H-E-R-R, and check out CNET.com for all of your tech needs. They cover everything. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us with your tech questions or any of that kind of stuff. Also, Matthew Hoffman is going to join us. He's from the Pickwick Classic Film Series. They will be hosting an event on Wednesday at 1 o'clock and 7:30 on the 18th of movie Holiday Inn, which is a classic holiday film. And we'll talk about that. And also really very cool, Chuck Shaden from Those Were the Days and Steve Darnall are going to be in the lobby hanging out. And Chuck Shaden's latest book is called Chuck Shaden's Radio Days. It's going to be available for purchase. And Jay Warren is going to be there to provide pre-show music. So that's going to be a fun night. So get into holiday spirit, go out and see Holiday Inn at the Pickwick Theater, and we'll talk with Matthew about that a little bit later on. We are going to talk about some Christmas songs tonight. We have some fun facts about Last Christmas by Wham, which of course is a song that I love. And then the greatest Christmas songs of all time. Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies have been ranked from worst to best. And did you see the rankings, Tom?
I took a little look into the bottom rung.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to see what the worst of the worst was.
Yeah.
I thought it was fair.
Yeah. When we get to it, I don't think number one should be number one. I don't remember what it was, but I remember looking at it and going, I don't think that should be number one. But anyway, they ranked all the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So have you seen Kumail Nanjiani? Have you seen him?
Yes. I saw the photo. Holy cow.
He's in Marvel's The Eternals.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically is ripped now.
Yeah, like, he is shredded.
It's ridiculous. You don't think of that when you think of him.
No, I mean, he's Kumail, you know? He's just kind of like your average everyday guy.
He's the guy from The Big Sick.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a great movie.
Spectacular.
But yeah, so we're going to talk about how actors dramatically change their bodies for roles. So, is every topic going to be Christian Bale?
At least a couple. You got Christian Bale in most of his performances over the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
The Machinist?
I still remember seeing that I was watching Extra when I was a kid. When did that movie come out? Like 2004?
Yeah, I think that's about right, yeah.
And I used to watch Extra every day I got home from school.
Extra, Extra.
Exactly. I'd get home and they're just like, Christian Bale in his new role. I had no idea who this guy was. He wasn't Batman yet, so to my young mind, he wasn't anybody.
Yeah.
Christian Bale in his new role has lost a shocking amount of weight, and they showed the picture. I remember running away.
Yeah, no,
I was
it's
like,
terrifying.
This is so scary.
I mean, he does it for all of us. I mean, like, American Hustle. American Hustle, he gained all that weight and shaved his head and had the stupid hair.
Yeah. And then Vice gaining all that weight to be Dick Cheney, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but American Hustle, I love that movie. I just love that movie. And when Bradley Cooper messes with his hair, it just, I mean, that's the opening scene of the movie is him like working on his head.
The comb over.
So anyway, all right, well, we'll get into that a little bit later on. Let me say hello officially to Tom Hush, my producer. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very good. Very good, as always.
All right. All right. Any plans for tomorrow?
No, for tomorrow. Just
two for Tuesday. Oh, that's tonight.
That's tonight. Two for Tuesday. Got the twofers coming in hot.
All right,
so that's
already
exciting. Yeah.
All righty. Well, we'll do that a little bit later on.
Yeah, and I'll get to see my my mom for the first time in like 4 months.
Well, she moved, right?
Yeah, she moved out to Colorado. She's going to be getting into the city Wednesday.
Is she here for the whole holidays?
Yeah, she'll be here for the whole holidays, and all the family's coming in. Brother, you know, her brothers and sisters, my aunts and uncles will all be hanging out this coming Saturday, having a little pizza party over at my grandma's house, see everybody. Because some of them are, one of them, my Uncle Pete's going out to Hawaii for the holidays, which is super cool. But yeah, just looking, kind of getting the band back together.
Yeah. Well, you're going to see the Star Wars movie this
year. Yeah, going to go see the Star Wars. Me and my beautiful girlfriend Lauren. We've got the Dolby Cinema tickets ready to go.
Yeah,
primo seats.
We're going Saturday afternoon. IMAX 3D. The whole yard.
Well, and you'll be going to see the movie right as I'm getting out.
Yeah, I'm going to the 2:15 show, and you're going to like noon.
Yeah, going at noon to the Dolby Cinema, and I'll just send a one word review to you as you go in.
Now, you Dolby Cinema. Which one are you going? River East?
Yeah, River East.
Okay.
Yeah, very nice.
Those Dolby Cinemas are amazing.
Oh yeah,
they're great.
Incredible.
They're really, really great. You know, the theater that my folks and I go to when we go to a movie, because my parents and I go to a movie every Saturday. And we always go to the theater in Skokie, the Village Crossing in Skokie, because, one, it's convenient. You know, there's a parking lot that's free. And they've got both an IMAX theater and a Dolby. So both of them are covered. So if we want to see a movie in Dolby, we can see it. And if we want to see a movie in IMAX, we can see it, too. So, but, well, yeah, we're gonna go for IMAX.
You know, there's a lot of discourse about the Star Wars right now. A lot of people are getting heated again. They're bringing back all the old arguments from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And now they've got the Mandalorian in there, and there's some folks saying, no, that's how you do Star Wars. And some people are saying, no, this is how you do Star Wars.
What's going on with the baby Yoda?
I mean, he's still around. You know? It's
Is he talking yet?
No. He's a baby.
He's a baby.
He just kind of coos. And
he eats frogs.
Yeah. And they've started previewing the Baby Yoda merch that's coming out early next year.
We knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. And they've got this this really cute one. And he comes with a little frog.
No,
he doesn't
really
eat it. He like reacts to it. It's a doll, you know, but he reacts to the frog, and a little bit like one of those tickle me elbows where you squeeze him and he makes a little noise, makes a little baby Yoda noise.
Oh, God.
Coos, and come on. It's cute.
Yeah.
You called him a mean name, though, a few weeks ago.
I did. And I don't even
I didn't like that.
I don't even have Disney Plus. So I don't, you know, I haven't seen one episode of The Mandalorian. So I don't even know what's going on. I just know that baby Yoda is everywhere.
Yeah, so the hype has not quite died down yet, but if you ask me, the last couple episodes, things are getting a little stale.
Oh, yeah?
Getting a little stale, a little bit of rehashy, you know, I'm not really sure where this show wants to go.
How many episodes are there?
I think six have, I've seen six.
Well, how many are there total?
I think eight for the season, so there's only going to be two more.
Are they hour long?
No, they're quite short. They're only about half an hour.
Really?
Yeah, maybe half an hour and some change. I think at longest they've gotten to about 40 minutes, which is nice because it's a TV show about something I care about that I don't have to, you know, say, oh, I can't watch it because it's long and I have to get to work. I've usually got half an hour that I can sit down and watch a Mandalorian.
True. Yeah, that's true. All right. Well,
it's working for me.
Baby Yoda continues.
I bet Ian's going to say that's one of the hottest toys coming next year. We already know what it's going to be. It's going to be Baby Yoda.
Yeah. Well, Baby Yoda's going to aren't they going to get the Yoda stuff, the Baby Yoda stuff out in time for Christmas? I mean,
we got
9 days till Christmas, right?
They've got some t-shirts and stuff, but the thing was
they don't have like a plush? There's
no, it's not because
get out of here.
Jon Favreau specifically, and I mean, Jon Favreau's got pull at Disney. We all know that. Jon Favreau specifically said, please do not start pushing this merch before The Mandalorian premieres, because it was a bit of a surprise that there was this little baby.
Yeah.
This little baby Yoda. People got really psyched about it. And so he was like, please let this be a surprise. Don't do the big marketing push, the big merch push beforehand. But it's kind of hurt them in the long run, because now people have to wait till kind of next year to get the little plushies, little toys, and wow, the Funko Pops and every...
I can't believe that they, you know... I mean, I can understand them, you know, not leaking the merch before the show, but now that the show's on and everybody knows who Baby Yoda is, why aren't you going to... Well, I mean, I can't believe that they're not going to take advantage of that.
I know. They couldn't get out fast enough.
All right. All right, well, let's take a break. Lots of tech stuff to talk about here at the end of the year and at the end of the decade. Ian Schur, who is editor-at-large at CNET.com, is going to join us. We got a lot to talk about. 312-981-7200 if you have a tech question of any kind. 312-981-7200. What the hell happened after that first album? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 4 a.m. It is Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Matthew Hoffman from the Pickwick Classic Film Series is going to join us to talk about his screening of Holiday Inn that he's hosting on Wednesday night. And there's also a matinee, too. Ranked all the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. We're going to talk about Christmas music, too. It's tech time. Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET.com, joins us once a month to talk tech and lots of year-end tech stories to talk about. So let's get Ian on. Ian, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I can't stop thinking about Baby Yoda myself.
Yeah, Baby Yoda's everywhere.
Did you know that there's a $300 to $500 version of the toy that's on Etsy?
No, really?
Yes. Yes, there's a 14-month waiting list as well, but and of course it's not called Baby Yoda, it's called Baby Master, because they don't want to get Disney suing them.
Oh, I see.
But it's a very realistic looking one, and it's fully posable. It has glass eyes, and it is hot. A lot of people are buying it.
300 to 500 range.
Yes, yeah, because there's one that's smaller and one that's bigger, of course.
Well, for that kind of money, Baby Yoda better make me breakfast every day. as we approach the end of the year and also the end of the decade, you know, we all look back on the years and the year itself at this time, and like for me as a film critic here at WGN, I always go back and I look back at the movies from this year and the movies from the decade, and put together stories and lists and stuff like that. And you guys do the same thing for tech. Was it a good tech year? What do you think?
2019 was a rough one, and it's actually funny. I did an entire decade review as well for tech, and looking at all the scandals, it's really funny because you started like 2010. It's like, you know, you've got the Apple scandal where, if you remember AntennaGate, right, people would hold the phone a certain way,
right,
and the phone would die, right? So that was the big tech scandal of the year. And now you get to like 2017, and suddenly it's about disinformation and the downfall of democracy and all these huge things. It's like, wow, 2010 was pretty tame.
Yeah.
So 2019 was even, you know, was actually pretty bad. You know, there was some product stuff like the Galaxy Fold. I don't know if you were following this, but this phone that Samsung came out with that folded in half.
Right.
It was supposed to be this real amazing thing. It cost $2,000. It was supposed to be a big deal. And it turns out that the screen was very easy to break. The reviewers were breaking the screens by accident within a week of its launch. And so Samsung pulled it immediately. They delayed it and delayed it and delayed it. It finally came out in September, but that was a huge debacle.
Yeah. Well,
and
then, of course, the piece that you wrote to sum up the year, the headline of the piece that you wrote is 2019 is the year tech couldn't stop screwing up. So that pretty much sums it all up right there.
It does. And I mean, everything else on this list is almost all regulatory trouble, right? It's Facebook getting in trouble. It's all sorts of other stuff. There are some cute stuff like Elon Musk accidentally breaking his unbreakable Cybertruck. But, yeah, you know, yeah. other than that, it's, a lot of it is just government stuff, which is, I mean, it's really interesting how much the government's involvement in the tech industry has become such a story in the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the Facebook thing was a huge one. What about the Libra, too?
Right. Libra was huge, right? And you may not have been following closely, but Facebook actually wants to replace all our money.
Yeah.
So what they've done, you may have heard of Bitcoin because it got really popular a couple of years ago.
Right.
So Libra is an attempt to do Bitcoin, but better. And Facebook's argument is that they're going to get all these people involved, like Visa and MasterCard and PayPal and all these people, and they'll tie it to real money so that it won't swing wildly, and they'll make it so that it works really well on the internet, so that people in other countries, and I've seen it, I went to Uganda and Tanzania, people in those countries don't have access to banks everywhere. They have to use their phones, and their phone companies actually have bank accounts that they use on their phones. It's really weird. And so he wanted to get rid of all of that and offer an internet version, which is a nice idea, but it's Facebook. And so what, of course, has happened in the last couple of months is everyone's pulling out because they don't want to work with Mark Zuckerberg. It's not a shock at all.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a disaster for them, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the other things in 2019. The Apple FaceTime bug.
Yeah. So that was something that if you blinked, you may have missed it. But a couple of months in, we found out that there was this. Actually, it's really funny. This kid was playing Fortnite, the popular video game. And what happens is you can't easily talk with your friends over the video game. So what you do is a lot of people call each other, and then they play while they're calling to get. It's really interesting. So anyway, FaceTime, it turns out that he was accidentally trying to add a couple of friends to a FaceTime video chat, and he accidentally added himself. And he suddenly realized that he was able to get everyone's phone to turn on without them answering.
Oh.
And it was this huge bug. It potentially had disastrous effects because imagine, like, if I'm a spy and I want to spy on the president of the United States who has an iPhone, all I have to do is use this trick and suddenly his phone will turn on.
Right.
And then it was crazy. So Apple immediately shut down FaceTime. They shut it down for a couple of weeks while they came out with a fix. But it was a real disaster and an embarrassment for Apple, who just a couple of months earlier had put up a big sign talking about how the Apple iPhone is so much more secure and reliable than everyone else.
Yeah.
And then they had this big disastrous hole. It was so odd.
Yeah, it's crazy. How about the Movie Pass?
Yeah, so that was another one of those really interesting moments on the internet. So Movie Pass was this really, you know, for a while it existed. It was like 50 or 60 bucks a month, and you got to watch unlimited movies. And some people involved, some people didn't. I mean, it's a hard sell. But then they decided to go for the gold and try and get as many people signed on as possible. So they said, okay, we're going to charge $10 a month, which is less than the cost of a normal movie, to be able to watch as many movies as you want. And a bunch of people signed up. And the company, I guess, assumed that by doing that, people would do the gym membership thing where a bunch of people are signed on, but they're not using it. Well, it didn't play out that way. A bunch of people signed on and immediately started watching a ton of movies, and it killed the company. Like, eventually, the stock went down to zero. The company had to go to bankruptcy. It was such a disaster for them. And it just goes to show you can't give stuff away for free, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
The idea that I go to one movie and it's already more expensive than the cost of the actual subscription. That should have been a ring to somebody that this was a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I remember talking about it on the air when it happened, just thinking, whose idea was this? I mean, what? all right, what about?
What I love is that it was a way for a company to give us all a little money, right?
Right.
That's
what it
came down to.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
We all got a little free money.
Yeah. All right. What about this? That you know, there was a lot of we've been talking about what has happened in 2019 over the year with Facebook. Facebook has had some serious problems over the year, and some of them were letting politicians lie in political ads. That was a big one.
Oh my gosh! And it's still happening. Facebook insists that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, has gone on record many times saying that he believes a politician, what they say is more important, and you seeing what they have to say is more important than censoring them. And in theory, that's a nice idea, right? And he doesn't want to be the arbiter of truth. which I don't want Mark Zuckerberg to be the arbiter of truth either. I would just rather politicians not lie, but I guess, you know, maybe I should wish for some other magical thing. So the trouble is that that Facebook said, okay, you can run any ad you want, and you can say whatever you want. And, of course, the first thing that started happening was that, you know, this started because Donald Trump, president of the United States, put out an ad that people said had lies in it, and Facebook refused to take it down. So then Elizabeth Warren, who's the candidate for running for president, decided to put out an ad with a bunch of lies on it, too, to make a point about how you can lie about anything. And then a bunch of other people started putting up ads saying that Republican congressmen and senators were in support of the Green New Deal and loved Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and all these like things to make a point about how it shouldn't be allowed. And still we're at this stalemate where Facebook refuses to change. Twitter has said they're not going to allow any more political ads because they don't want to get in the middle of this.
Yeah.
YouTube has basically said they're not going to do it either, although they're allowing some. But it's become this huge debacle because we're dealing with all this disinformation and propaganda. And, of course, people are saying, well, wait a minute. Why are you allowing this to happen?
Yeah.
So I don't know how it's going to play out, but it's quite interesting to watch.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay. Ian, hang on, okay? All right, Ian Schur is with us. He joins us monthly. He's editor-at-large at CNET.com. We've got a lot of tech stories to talk about, especially now at the end of the year and at the end of the decade. Lots of really fun stuff that they write about. You should definitely check out CNET for all your tech needs. And if you have any tech questions of any kind, 312-981-7200. Phone number, 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here on a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. My guest right now is Ian Schur, joins us once a month, editor-at-large at CNET.com, and lots of tech stories to talk about from the year and the decade. Let's get Ian back on. Hey, Ian.
Hi.
So let's talk about the, you guys have your holiday gift guide, the CNET holiday gift guide. Yeah, let's talk about some of the things that you guys are recommending people get or that you like.
Yeah, I think one of the things we really wanted to do is offer people kind of a couple of ideas that were easy stocking stuffers as well as going for the biggies, right? So one of the things that I think was probably the most interesting stocking stuffer that CNET absolutely loved, it's called the Amazon Echo Dot with clock.
Okay.
Now, the Amazon Echo Dot is the small hockey puck-shaped thing that has that woman AI that I won't mention her name, so
right.
I don't set a bunch of them off.
Right.
And so one of the really interesting things about it is that it has the smart speaker in it, and it's got a clock. Mm-hmm. And I know that's silly that it's enough to make us really gaga over it, but it seems like one of those things that really works well. Like a lot of people have one of these things either in their kitchens or in their living rooms or in their bedrooms, and having that clock is super useful. And our reviewers are like, yeah, it's a decent speaker with a clock. Why not?
Yeah.
So we were big fans of it. $35. So, you know, it's a pretty good deal during the holidays. It's normally $60. So you can find it for a pretty good deal. Then there's one of the other products that we like as a stocking stuffer. It's called the Roku Streaming Stick Plus. Now, this is also around $50. And what it is that if you have a TV that's a dumb TV, it's not a smart TV, it's a dumb TV, and you've been thinking about, do I need an Apple TV or a Google or whatever, we recommend this one because it is easy to plug in, it's easy to use, it supports all the same apps practically as all the big guys, and it's really easy to use. So we're big fans of it. And the software is now powering a lot of the best TVs that we like. Like one of them's from TCL. It's a Chinese company. They sell a 65-inch TV that we really like that's between about $500 and $800, depending on how you get it. And that is also powered by Roku software. So there's a lot of kind of an ecosystem being built up that we're big fans of. So good stocking stuffer. And if you're thinking about it, I actually ended up buying one of those TVs myself. So where a bunch of us at CNET are fans of that one.
Oh, that's great.
And then one of the other things we really recommend is if you're looking at streaming services, especially people who have kids, You cannot go wrong with Disney Plus. And we've been looking at it really carefully. And one of the things that we're big fans of is that the amount of content there is enormous. You've got Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, National Geographic. You've got just a bunch of stuff in there. You know, the new shows, The Mandalorian, obviously we're talking about Baby Yoda. That has been a very big cultural phenomenon. But there's also just the fact that all of these Disney things are there and that Disney is making this so interesting and offering so much in it. There's a lot of other streaming services, you know, CBS, for example, my employer, they've got their all access thing.
Yeah.
You've got Hulu. You've got all these other people doing stuff, HBO Max. But if you're looking for the best bang for your buck right now, we believe over at CNET that Disney Plus is the answer. So that's an option for you as well.
Yeah, well, the Disney Plus thing is really obviously taken off. I mean, even besides Baby Yoda, you know, my producer Tom subscribes to Disney Plus, and just, I mean, the content, the amount of content, as you mentioned, Ian, is really amazing.
It's enormous, right? And it's funny, like, I thought about trying to beat out Disney's game, and I started this way before Disney Plus, where I would buy the movies on eBay and stuff and try and get them all hoarded up because, you know, they used to have, like, they would go in the vault and you couldn't buy it. So I tried to hoard up as many movies as I could in preparation for having my kids. And it's still, I'm not anywhere close to what Disney Plus offers.
Yeah.
So at some point, I'm probably going to have to dip in and pay. But and then also, one of the other things we're pointing out for people when it comes to kids, if you're looking for a video game device, one of our favorite devices is called the Nintendo Switch. It's actually, there's a smaller version called the Switch Lite. It's under $200. And this thing has become a phenomenon in the video game world. If you're not trying to play like Call of Duty and these super advanced games, but instead looking for the really fun games, and I'm not saying Call of Duty can't be fun, but you know what I mean. This has been a hugely successful product for Nintendo. And it has really shown us that a mobile gaming device can be really fun to play. One of the games on it, the Zelda Breath of the Wild, is one of the top-rated games ever made by Metacritic. And same thing for Super Mario Odyssey. So both of which are on that device. So we're really big fans of that. That's a bigger stocking stuffer, but still a popular one.
Yeah. Nintendo Switch Lite.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And the difference between the Switch and the Switch Lite, if you're interested, is that the Switch has the controllers you can pop out from the screen and play them separately.
Oh, right.
You can plug it into your TV, watch it bigger. The Switch Lite, everything's just self-contained. You can't plug it into a TV, which I know I might sound like a weirdo. I have never plugged my Nintendo Switch into a television. So for me, it's actually totally normal, and I would be totally in the right market for the Switch Lite if I were buying one.
Okay. All right. We have a text here, Ian. Maybe you can help out here.
Sure.
605 area code says, what are your thoughts on the use of password vaults like LastPass in the coming decade?
Oh, so I am a big fan of these vaults. So I use a competitor to LastPass called 1Password. It's the number 1Password. There's a lot of people inside CNET who use LastPass as well. They are really good. And the reason is because they offer a way for you to have a bunch of different passwords for all the different websites you go to, which is what every nerd will tell you is what you're supposed to do. But they're all hidden behind this 1Password that is very well protected. And so the idea is that you've got random passwords every website. You've got 1Password that you use to get into this app, and it's super easy. I love the technology. The unfortunate reality is that not many people use it. And most people, when I'm on the radio, they had never heard of it. And that's a problem because what you end up with is still a bunch of people who get hacked all the time. You know, I don't know if you heard over the weekend, Ring, the video doorbells, they were getting hacked.
Right.
It turned out they weren't getting hacked. What happened was that the hackers went and found old passwords from Yahoo or Adobe or some other hack that had happened and then tested them on Ring. And it turned out all these people use the same passwords everywhere they go. And bada bing, they got into their Ring accounts. So this is a huge problem. So one of the things we recommend, if you're not going to go through the trouble of learning how to use 1Password and LastPass, which you should, but if you're not, because I realize you're just part human beings, you don't want to do it, is that there's this other thing called two-factor authentication. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but banks use it a lot, where what they do is when you try to sign in, they send you a text message with the code,
right,
and then you type in that code. And that is really, really good. It gets you much, much safer. It's not perfect, but it gets you much safer. You can turn that on for Google, Facebook, Twitter. You can turn it on for Ring. You can turn it on for all of them. You should go and do that. Two-factor authentication. Do it tonight. You'll thank me in the morning. It's okay. Really worth it.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for answering that question. We have another call. Here's Carl on WGN. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Listen, I hope you don't mind. I just got something today they shipped to me, and if I could just get your opinion on the Bose Soundwave System 4.
Bose Soundwave System 4.
Pardon?
So Bose Soundwave System 4. I don't know it off the top of my head. But you know what? The funny part is that CNET, we do a crazy number of reviews, and I have a feeling that we probably have looked at it. If you give me just a hot second,
yeah.
Let's see.
And Carl, you can always check out the stuff that's online at CNET.com. They have reviews of tons of products like the Bose, and you can check it out. Always check out CNET.com, C-N-E-T, CNET.com.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, we have looked at a bunch of them. And I'm looking at one of the earlier reviews we did, and we said that it was okay. We really liked that it was easy to set up and that it was simple to use, which is important. But one of the troubles that we had was that it's a little expensive, which at CNET we always complain when we feel like companies charge more than they're worth. Mm. And the other thing is that there weren't as much controls as we wanted over equalization, so controlling the treble or the bass. The newer versions might have that. I honestly don't know. But that was the big complaints that we had about it in the past.
Okay. So those are all that stuff is available at CNET. Carl, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking with Ian Scher from CNET.com. You guys chose the top tech products of 2019. What are some of those?
So one of the things that we also that we really pointed out, I think it was actually not just 2019, it was the whole decade. I'm not sure which one you're looking at. But the
it says right here, it's by Jason Heiner, and it's CNET names okay. The 2019's top tech products of the year.
Yes. Sorry. Keeping track of everything is sometimes hard.
Oh, I understand. You guys are all over the place on CNET. I understand.
Yeah. So we actually had a list of what we tried to do this year is we really wanted to make it easy for you to find just the top things that we had reviewed, because we review a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And one of the things we did is that we said, okay, let's take all of these things, let's make it easy to find. So in the phone world, the top products that we loved, for example, were the Motorola Moto G7, which was a great budget phone under $300 in the U.S., the Samsung Galaxy Note 10, which is a super high-end thing that mixed style and substance. And then in the middle, we really liked the Apple iPhone 11. We said it was the best value for the dollar across the line so far. So that was a really one. And then we got some other ones that we really liked. When it came to home entertainment, I mentioned that TCL TV.
Yeah.
It's called the 6 Series Television. We are huge fans of it. The software is easy to use. The quality is super high. And you'll find that our reviewer, David Katzmeyer, he goes into so much detail about the way that the image is produced, and he tests it on the same movie over and over, which I feel sorry for him that he has to watch the same movie over and over again. I hope he found a good one. But the thing is that we even review the quality of the sound coming out of it, because not everyone buys a sound bar. So we want to make sure that you've got good sound coming out of it. So those are all things we look at on the TVs. We also obviously reviewed some of the computers. But one of the other things that we started looking at is the smart home stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, whether you should... So our favorite camera for your home, you know, there's Ring, there's Nest, there's all these companies. One of the ones you may not have heard of is called Wyze, W-Y-Z-E. It is the product that we loved in 2019. For less than $30, you get a camera that competes with a $200 camera. And it is really impressive. The company is based in Seattle, so you don't have to worry about whether it's this Chinese company trying to get into your life or something. And they have just really cool stuff. So we're big fans of that one. They also have a light bulb that they sell and a bunch of other stuff too. So worth taking a look at them. And then obviously I mentioned the streaming services. Disney Plus is a big deal. And then finally, one of the other things that you might want to consider is if you want to replace your TV altogether, we are big fans of YouTube TV and Sling TV, and we have a whole thing on why, but those are two to look at as well.
Okay. All right. Ian, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Ian Scher is with us from CNET.com. He's an editor at large there, and we're going to talk about some of the other important apps of the decade. We're going to look back at the decade and talk about some of the big apps from that decade. All right, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio. Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday coming up. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Matthew Hoffman is going to join us after midnight. He is a part of the Pickwick Classic Film Series, and they are showing a classic on Wednesday night at the beautiful Pickwick Theater, Holiday Inn. And there's some other fun stuff that's happening that evening. There's two shows. There's going to be one at 1 o'clock, a matinee, and then at 7:30. We'll tell you all about that with our friend Matthew Hoffman. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. Ian Schur is with us, editor-at-large at CNET.com, talking about all the tech from big tech stories from 2019. And let's get Ian back in here. Ian, welcome back.
Hi.
All right. So you guys talked about some of the most important apps of the decade, and you went through all of them. Tell us a little bit about this. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's the obvious ones like Instagram, which really changed a lot of culture. And actually, what I think is really fascinating is it's changed the way that the entertainment industry works. Almost every celebrity is on Instagram.
Yeah.
They're actually using Instagram more than Twitter sometimes. Even, you know, it's really fascinating, like a lot of the underrepresented groups. Like we have a great story on CNET about the Muslim fashion world and how that has become such a thing through Instagram. It's really fascinating. So Instagram, of course, has been a huge, huge conversation around the last decade.
Yeah.
Same thing with Twitter. I don't think I have to explain to anyone why anymore. I mean, it's upended politics. It's upended the way that pretty much anything works anymore. It changed my job. So it's been quite a thing. Now, whether you like it or not, that's another debate, right? Same
yeah.
thing with Facebook.
Yeah.
But I think some of the ones that stood out that maybe people didn't think about, one of them is actually Angry Birds. You know, a lot of us may not have thought about it for a long time, but it launched in 2009. So, you know, decade, we're being a little fudgy here. But one of the things that's really important is that game really showed us how viral a video game can be
yeah.
on phones. We hadn't seen that really before. And it built a company so large that to this day, they've had two movies, they've come out with a bunch of different games, and they are growing still day after day, year after year. And that is impressive.
Yeah.
Same thing with Candy Crush, another game that just became such a viral hit. I'm really fascinated by that. And then Vine. Some of us may have missed this one. It was a company that started on this idea of short-form videos. This may sound familiar, and I'll explain why in a second. So Vine started with this idea of having really short videos that you could then repeat on loop, and people started doing all sorts of really creative stuff. It became very popular with teenagers, and it actually created people that we now watch on YouTube. If you know people like the Jake Paul and the Logan Paul and
yeah.
David Dobrik and a bunch of other
yeah,
people,
yeah.
they started on Vine. So it's really interesting. It was 6-second-long videos. Now we have TikTok, which is the new viral sensation, and shock, it uses a lot of the same ideas that Vine had,
yeah.
and it is becoming a huge thing. The difference between Vine and TikTok, though, TikTok is based in China, and Vine was based in the United States, so there's a lot of drama over how TikTok is run and politics and all of that. I could get into that forever, but the point is it's really fascinating how people love playing with different types of video, and how popular it's been, even after so many years. It kind of is crazy that Twitter shut its Vine down and gave up on it because, oh my gosh, how successful it was. And then one of my favorite other things to point out is a game called Flappy Bird.
Uh-huh.
This was probably one of the most difficult games ever. You can't actually download it anymore, which is really sad. There's a lot of knockoffs out there, but it was so popular in 2014. It was the top of the App Store list for a long time. And the guy who created it, who's based in Vietnam, felt so bad because people had become so addicted to it that he removed the game from the App Store. And and it became such a thing that people were trying to sell phones on eBay for $100,000 that had the game still on
Whoa,
it.
Whoa, what?
Yes. I don't know if they were ever successful selling it, but
that was how popular this game was for a while. And you still can't download it. So, you know, maybe someone really wants to play that game.
Wow.
Yeah, right? And then, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize how much video chat has become such a thing. You know, when Apple came out with FaceTime back in 2010 and Skype really started doing video on phones in 2009, a lot of people kind of poo-pooed it. I myself had looked at a lot of data that said that there's probably five people in your life you want to video chat with. Well, it turns out that once people got the technology right, people do it all the time now. And Zoom is one of the ones who does it really successful in the business world. And they have been able to take off and build a real business around it, even though Cisco and a bunch of other people have been trying to do it beforehand. So it's really fascinating how popular video chat became.
Yeah. Well, what about, you know, another phenomenon, Pokemon Go?
Oh, my gosh,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that came out in 2016, and it just went bananas. And you know, what I think is really important about that game, first off, it's a universal idea, right? You've got these little monsters that you're walking around, and if no one ever played it, go outside and play it. It's still around. You can. What you do is you hold your phone up, and you walk down the street, and as you're walking, you'll finally see a monster you have to catch. And what you do is you throw the ball at the monster, and it's super fun. And it overlays the monster on the real world, so it looks like that monster is sitting on the mailbox right in front of you. And it's a really addictive game.
Oh, it became so addictive. I remember you know people falling down in you know almost getting hit by cars. One guy got pulled over by the cops for actually playing it while he was driving. I mean, I remember in my neighborhood, there were kids walking around. There were people walking, not just kids, but adults walking around everywhere with their phones. And I mean, for a good 2 month period straight, nothing but Pokemon Go.
And that's what I remember. It was really taking off when I got off the bus one day in my neighborhood and saw a kid and their parent walking around like that. I was like, okay. This is a real thing. And, you know, I think what was really interesting is it showed us the power of what a phone game can do, different from what a video game on the Xbox can do. And it was this introduction to this new idea of technology that overlays on the real world, right? Mixing computers and real world imagery. And people loved it. And to this day, by the way, it is a hugely popular game, even though ironed out a lot of bugs. Like, there are no more monsters that are in minefields. I'm not kidding. They were encouraging people to go to minefields at one point. There were also ones that you could catch at the Holocaust Museum. Not cool. But they've ironed out a lot of those bugs.
Yeah. We have a text here from someone. Maybe you can help them out. 630 area code says, what is the coolest gift for a 10-year-old boy? Is there a little, is there like an electronic gizmo gift that you think are great for 10-year-old boys?
Yeah, so there's actually a couple. So first off is that Nintendo Switch Lite. If you're if you're the parent or if you know the parent and you want to talk to them and you have to add your dollars to blow, that's not a bad call. But if you're looking for something a little cheaper, we actually are really big fans of something called Lego Technic, T-E-C-H-N-I-C. It's under $20 generally. It's these trucks that you can build in the Lego world. They've got a motor and a pop-out engine block that'll pop out when it crashes. And there are actually four in this series. And if you buy them all, you can kind of combine them in fun ways. And they're just really good for kids 7 and older.
Yeah.
And unlike most Lego sets, they're very affordable, which is good as well.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you for that. All right, Ian, always great to have you on. You can check out Ian's stuff at cnet.com. Follow him on Twitter at Ian Scherr. That's S-H-E-R-R. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ian. Great job, as always, covering the tech world. And everybody should check out cnet.com. Ian, have a great holiday.
You as well. Take care.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Take care. Ian Scherr joins us once a month to talk tech. Always fun, always informative. And all of the stuff that we're talking about and much more is available at cnet.com, and you should check it out. Okay, we got the news coming up. Back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Is that our first twofer? No? Oh, you're just playing Father Christmas. Okay. I love that song. And speaking of songs, we are going to be talking about the greatest Christmas songs of all time and some facts about Last Christmas by Wham. And we're also going to jump into the world of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, which have been ranked from worst to best. It is the holiday time, and it's always great to go out and do some holiday-themed things and go out and see maybe a nice Christmas film. Matthew Hoffman from the Pickwick Classic Film Series is hosting a screening of Holiday Inn at the Pickwick Theater on December 18th, meaning tomorrow, Wednesday. And there are two screenings. There's a 1 o'clock matinee, 1 p.m., and a 7:30 showing in the evening. And there's more stuff. They always try to make it even more special, showing a classic movie. So let's welcome Matthew back to the show. Matthew, welcome back.
Happy holidays to you, Nick.
Same to you.
Great to be back.
Yeah, great to have you. So this is going to be a fun one, and there's some special stuff that's also happening in the evening screening. But tell everybody about Holiday Inn.
Well, Holiday Inn is this year's big Christmas show. In the past, you know, we've shown movies like Miracle on 34th Street and White Christmas, and White Christmas is a film that a lot of people associate with Holiday Inn. They're very similar, but I've always loved Holiday Inn a lot more than White Christmas. Holiday Inn, of course, stars Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire. Marjorie Reynolds and Virginia Dale are the actresses in the film. But it's one of the all-time holiday classics, Nick. I mean, Fred and Bing play a couple song and dance men who compete for the love of Marjorie Reynolds. And the film was just loaded with all these great Irving Berlin songs. The most famous one, of course, is White Christmas, and it's sung in films for the very first time in this film. And there's other great tunes like Easter Parade and Be Careful, It's My Heart. But it was directed by Mark Sandrich, who did a lot of the Fred Astaire films at RKO with Ginger Rogers. But I'm very excited about this one because every year we try and show a Christmas film, but Holiday Inn, I think, is one of the top films at Christmas. And, you know, we got a lot going on for this event. We're going to have Radio Hall of Famer Chuck Shaden as a special guest. He's going to be in the lobby at 6:30 with copies of his new book, Chuck Shaden's Radio Days. Of course, Chuck Shaden is the founder of Those Were the Days, heard on another station. But 50 years, you know, he was, Those Were the Days have been on the air.
Yeah, he's a legend. Mm-hmm. The guy's a legend.
He's a legend.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And in his new book, it's sort of like a memoir. It's basically about how he became producer and host of Those Were the Days, which began, I believe, in 1970. And, you know, over the years, you know, stations were sold and, you know, formats changed. But, you know, Chuck was still doing the show and interviewing all these great, you know, stars from radio's glory days, you know, like Jack Benny and stuff. So it's a wonderful book. This is the first time we've had Chuck Shaden there as a guest. And we're also going to have Steve Darnall, who's the current host of Those Were the Days. He'll be there in the lobby also at 6:30. And then at 7 o'clock, Jay Warren, our house organist, is going to be performing some Christmas tunes on the Mighty Wurlitzer. So we got a lot of fun stuff in store for fans.
Yeah, it sounds really great. And I bet the book is great. Chuck Shaden's Radio Days. I bet it's really probably jam-packed with so much fun stuff.
Yeah, it is. I just started reading it. He did an earlier book, Speaking of Radio, and it, just his reminiscences. I mean, it's just so. If you're a fan of old time radio, definitely pick up the book. It'd make a wonderful, you know, stocking stuffer. Yeah. And you know, it's you know, I always try and keep the old classic films alive, but it's also important that, you know, we keep alive the radio tradition,
yeah,
you know, which is a little bit harder, you know, with getting people to, you know, sit in front of a radio and use their imagination. But it's such a rich history, and, you know, kudos to Chuck Shaden and Steve Darnall.
And we've got,
you know, keeping the old time radio.
Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, we've got a WGN radio theater here on WGN on Saturday nights.
Yes.
With Carl,
right.
Carl Amare and Lisa Wolf.
Yes,
and,
I know.
And they do a great job, you know, talking about the old time radio, keeping it alive. And you get to hear these classic old time radio shows. And I love that show. I think Carl and Lisa do a great job.
They do. You know, it's terrific stuff. You know, and of course, we're always trying to get younger people interested in, you know, listening to old time radio. And, you know, it's such a great format.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's great that there are people out there in the world, you know, trying to preserve this. But yeah, no, this is Bing Crosby, of course, is, you know, one of the biggest stars, one of the all time recording artists,
yeah.
Biggest recording artist of the 20th century. And, you know, when this film was made, Holiday Inn, I mean, he was sort of at his peak. I mean, he was the biggest box office draw at Paramount Studio, and it's really a fun film. I mean, there's a lot of romantic comedy aspects to it.
Yeah.
And to see Fred Astaire dance, one of the most amazing numbers in this film is that Let's Say It with Firecrackers, where Fred Astaire dances with the fireworks going off,
right.
The firecrackers. And if I'm not mistaken, Fred Astaire did that in rehearsals like 38 times before he was finally satisfied with it. But that's like the big, you know, 4th of July number in the film. But of course, Holiday Inn is about a couple song and dance guys who perform at this Holiday Inn, this inn that's only open during the holidays throughout the year. So they basically go through all the big, you know, Christmas and, you know, New Year's, Valentine's Day throughout the year, doing all these great musical numbers.
Yeah.
It's some great stuff if you're a fan of musicals.
That's great. And I mean, you can't match Irving Berlin. I mean, that's just you can't.
Of course, White Christmas won the Oscar for best song that year.
Yeah.
So that was
1942 is when the film was released. Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire were probably at the height of their popularity at that point in 1942.
And then Bing Crosby, of course, you know, even became even bigger with the road pictures they did with Bob Hope.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Some great stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. So Holiday Inn on the big screen. And there's tell everybody there is also a 1 o'clock matinee. You like to do, you started doing this, how long ago, about a year ago you started doing the matinees or a little longer?
2 years ago. We started doing the matinees when we first started the program, but we moved it up earlier to 1 o'clock about 2 years ago.
Okay.
So yeah, no, we've got the 1 o'clock matinee, and we want to try and get seniors to come.
Yeah.
Maybe moms who have a little time before they pick up their kids.
Yeah.
You know. So, and it seems to be working out well. You know, we've been getting some good crowds for the 1 p.m. matinee, and it's only $8.
Yeah, it's only $8 for the 1 o'clock matinee, and then the screening at 7:30, which also is going to have Radio Hall of Famer Chuck Shaden, host of Those Were the Days, and Steve Darnell, the current host. They'll be in the lobby. Chuck's latest book is called Chuck Shaden's Radio Days. It'll be available for purchase. And you guys are also going to have the Nostalgia Digest on sale that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jay Warren, our good old Jay Warren, is going to play some pre-show music on the Mighty Wurlitzer. And that'll start at 7, and the movie will start at 7:30. And it's the beautiful Pickwick Theater. How's the, what do you guys call it, the mega screen? What do you...
It's called the Mega Theater.
Mega Theater.
The Mega Theater, last year, the Pickwick had another renovation. They put in one of the largest screens in the Chicago area. They put in a new sound system, laser projection. It's really fabulous. So for those who have never been there, you'd be in for a real treat.
Yeah, and the Pickwick Theater is a treasure. You know, we don't have a lot of the standalone theaters, beautiful movie houses anymore. It's one of the few that we have, and if you've never been to the Pickwick in Park Ridge, you should go. And what better, you know, to see a classic holiday movie, Holiday Inn.
And then January 15th, we're going to be doing a 30th anniversary of Goodfellas.
That's unbelievable.
So that's going to be a lot of fun.
I feel really old. Goodfellas is 30
time
years
flies.
Old. Oh, my God. You know, it was really funny. Quick story, Matthew. The first time I saw Goodfellas was at a press screening, but it was like sponsored by a radio station. So, you know, there were a lot of people who had won tickets,
sure.
You know, were there. And I went with my friend Scott, and we were running late and we didn't have time to eat. And we were both like really starving. That is not a good movie to watch when you're hungry.
No, it's not.
It is so not. I mean, you know, like there's great food scenes in that movie. I mean, you know, when they're in prison and these and Paul Sorvino is cutting the garlic with the razor blade and all the food that Joe Pesci's mom makes in the movie, and it's actually Scorsese's mom in real life, but
yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. My friend and I, we couldn't get to the McDonald's fast enough. Oh my God. So January 15th, Goodfellas on the big screen, and then tomorrow night and tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock and at 7:30, the classic Holiday Inn, and Chuck Shaden will be there for the evening screening. Always a great time. Matthew, you do a great job. Have a great holiday, okay?
You too, Nick. Thanks again for having me on.
Anytime. Take care, buddy. All right. Matthew Hoffman, everybody. Pickwick Classic Film Series tomorrow, 1 o'clock and at 7:30 p.m., the classic Holiday Inn at the Pickwick Theater. You should come out and see it. A really, really great holiday thing to do. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk since Holiday Inn is a musical, and it's got some classic songs in it, and obviously White Christmas is one of the classic Christmas songs of all time. We are going to talk about some of the greatest Christmas songs of all time and some fun facts about the Wham! Song Last Christmas. So Christmas music is what we're talking about. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Really festive song to play at this time of year. I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell. Two for Tuesday, so that was a listener who requested that. 312-981-7200, who requested the Blue Oyster Cult.
And it's coming to us from Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin. All right, here we go. Some Christmas Blue Oyster Cult for you. So we're getting into some Christmas music as we get closer to the holiday. And if you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you. What are your favorite Christmas songs? Your favorite. 312-981-7200. And obviously, White Christmas is one of the classic, one of the most classic Christmas songs of all time. And it's part of the movie Holiday Inn, which you can see on the big screen tomorrow. So, all right. Well, let's get into some surprising facts about Wham's Christmas song Last Christmas, which they just named a movie after that didn't do very well at the box office, despite the fact that Emilia Clarke is ridiculously charming. See, I never watched Game of Thrones, so like my first like full on exposure to her was this movie.
You didn't see Terminator Genesis?
I did. I just don't remember her in it. Because that movie was
terrible.
Could
have been anybody. Could have been
anybody.
Speaking
of Schwarzenegger, we'll get to that a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. But she's so lovely in that movie, in Last Christmas. And then I saw her, obviously, doing press for it all over the place on talk shows and stuff. And she's just really, she's really charming and lovely. Now, she wasn't like that on the show, right? She was like running around with dragons and stuff?
Well, eventually, yeah. Eventually, she got mean.
Yeah,
she became the Khaleesi, you know, the leader of the horse people, like the horse lords and everything like that.
Horse people?
Well, not literal horse people, not like centaurs or something like that. But
I don't know.
People who ride horses.
I never watched Game of Thrones. I got about four episodes into the first season. I was like, yeah, no, I don't have no idea what the hell's going on.
Checked out.
Yeah, but that was a big deal this past year. It doing a year in review. The Game of Thrones, the final season of Game of Thrones, and the coffee cup.
And there was a water bottle, too.
And a water bottle. Coffee cup and a water bottle.
And a really kind of poor season finale.
Got all your liquid covered. All right, so we're talking about Christmas songs. What are your favorite Christmas songs that you go to? We talked about the worst ones a couple of weeks ago, like the worst Christmas songs ever. Well, now we're going to the opposite. What are your favorite Christmas songs, best Christmas songs of all time? We've got an article here that lists a bunch of them. It's from timeout.com in Britain. So a lot of these are sort of like British, the British songs that people love over there. But one of them that I love is Wham's Last Christmas. And so we have 10 surprising facts about Wham's Last Christmas. You a fan of Last Christmas by Wham?
I used to not be. It used to really, really grate on me for a while. And then I opened my heart up to Wham.
You have to open up your heart to Wham.
I know. I was a fool.
Yes, you were.
But I was baptized in the waters of Wham.
I love Wham. Always have. Always have. And I love George Michael. Over the course of his illustrious career, George Michael gave the world many gifts. One that keeps on giving is Last Christmas, the 1984 holiday classic by Wham, Michael's pop duo with Andrew Ridgely. Last Christmas is such a uniquely beloved song that it inspired a 2019 film of the same name, and that's just one interesting part of the Last Christmas story. 10 fascinating facts about this seasonal synth pop favorite. We'll get to that in a minute, but we got people who are calling in with their favorite Christmas songs. We're getting all Christmassy here. Here's Lisa on WGN. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi.
How about I'll Be Home with Bells On by Dolly Parton? It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, Dolly Parton, she's a gift.
Yeah, but that song, most people have never heard of it, and it is just wonderful.
Yeah. We'll have to maybe dust that one off before we get out of here this week.
Oh, I'd love it.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa.
Sure. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. All right. Facts about Wham's Last Christmas. You ready, everybody? Start jotting down your notes. George Michael wrote Last Christmas in his childhood bedroom. Last Christmas was born one day in 1984 when George Michael and Wham bandmate Andrew Ridgely were visiting Michael's parents. While they were sitting around watching TV, Michael suddenly dashed upstairs to his childhood bedroom and composed the modern Christmas classic in an hour. George had performed music alchemy, distilling the essence of Christmas into music, Ridgely said, adding a lyric which told the tale of betrayed love and a masterstroke, and he did so often he touched everybody's hearts. So this is a guy, if you listen to the lyrics of the song, this is a guy who's been like holding a grudge against this girl for a year. Last Christmas isn't really a Christmas song. There's nothing in Last Christmas about Santa, reindeer, trees, snow, or anything we typically associate with the holiday. Rather, the song is about a failed romance that just happens to have begun on December 25th when Michael gave someone their heart and ended on December 26th. When this ungrateful person gave it away. So, yeah. Good old George Michael. All right. So, George Michael wrote and produced the song, but that's not all. By the time Wham recorded Last Christmas in August, yes, August of 1984, Michael had taken full control of the group. In addition to writing and producing the song, Michael insisted on playing the Roland Juno 60 synth in the studio. high-tech, man. High-tech stuff from 1984 right there.
The sound of the 80s.
The Roland Juno 60 synth. George wasn't a musician, engineer Chris Porter said. It was a laborious process because he was literally playing the keyboards with two or three fingers. Michael even jangled the sweet sleigh bells himself.
Wow.
So he did everything. Last Christmas didn't reach number one on the UK charts. As the movie Love Actually reminds us, scoring a Christmas number one in the UK is a really big deal. Unfortunately, Last Christmas didn't give Wham that honor. It stalled at number two. And to this day, it has the distinction of being the highest-selling UK single of all time to not reach number one. How did it not reach number one?
You're about to find out.
George Michael sang the song that kept Last Christmas at number two. Last Christmas was bested on the UK charts by Band-Aid's Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yeah, that's how.
An all-star charity single benefiting Ethiopian famine relief. Michael sang on Do They Know It's Christmas and was so committed to the cause that he donated his profits from Last Christmas to helping the African nation. So that's a couple of great songs they have on the top of the charts.
Yeah.
At one time.
Think of that. The only reason that your beloved Christmas classic single is not on number, never made number one, is because of your other beloved Christmas classic single.
George Michael was sued for plagiarism over Last Christmas.
What?
In the mid-1980s, the publishing company Dick James Music sued George Michael on behalf of the writers of Can't Smile Without You. A schmaltzy love song recorded by the Carpenters and Barry Manilow, among others. According to Chris Porter, the recording engineer on Last Christmas, The suit was dismissed after a musicologist presented 60-plus songs that have similar chord progressions and melody. I can see there's a similarity. There's no question that there's a similarity.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Between the two.
No doubt.
Last Christmas has been covered by a lot of other artists. Jimmy Eat World, Hilary Duff, Good Charlotte, Ariana Grande, Carly Rae Jepsen, Gwen Stefani, and Taylor Swift are just a few of the artists who have covered Last Christmas over the years. The strangest rendition may be the 2006 dance version by the Swedish CGI character Crazy Frog. Can we grab that real quick? It reached number 16 on the UK charts. Remember Crazy Frog?
I'd really rather not.
I like Crazy Frog. He's crazy and he's a frog.
But he had, it was just the most annoying thing of all time.
Yeah.
I remember when it was everybody's like cell phone ringtone that ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Like it was just damned awful. All right. Here's a little bit of Crazy Frog
doing Last Christmas. What is he doing?
He's getting dropped into a vat of, like, I don't know, Christmas juice?
Christmas juice? He's getting dropped into a vat of Christmas juice.
Yeah, I wish I could describe it better, but he's in, like, Santa's workshop.
Yeah.
He's got one of those, like, cranes on his head carrying him around and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and now he's met a little girl frog, and she got crushed by a thing. I don't.
Wait,
oh
wait, wait.
God.
Did they kill the girl frog?
It looks like they're just getting stamped or something.
And then dropped into Christmas juice, as you said. There it is.
That is criminal. That's criminal. You can't like that.
Reached number 16 on the UK charts, my friend. It was a top 20 hit.
You know what? I think the UK, they've had it. They're done now. No, you can't put that in the top 20.
Wow,
and still call yourself a nation.
Oh, okay. All right, why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back. We're talking about Christmas songs. What are your favorite Christmas songs of all time? We got a very unusual list of the best Christmas songs according to Time Out Britain. And we want more facts about Wham's Last Christmas by Crazy Frog being dropped in Christmas juice. Whatever that is. All right, let's take a break. Songs to hear in this holiday season. We're talking about some of the best Christmas songs of all time. What are your favorites? And giving you some facts about the classic Wham! Christmas song, Last Christmas, which has actually become a staple now. I remember when they first released it in 1984. And people were like, why is Wham! Releasing a Christmas song? And now all these years later, they make a movie out of it.
It's the bomb.
Yeah. Some quick texts here. We're talking about, if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're talking text, talking about some of the greatest Christmas songs. 301 area code says, some of my favorite Christmas songs include When a Child is Born, Coventry Carol, and A Cradle in Bethlehem. Steve says, as far as Christmas songs go, it can't get any better than A Holly Jolly Christmas sung by Big Daddy.
Big Daddy?
Holly Jolly Christmas, I mean, the quintessential version of Holly Jolly Christmas is Burl Ives, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, more facts about Last Christmas. Some people make a concerted effort to avoid hearing Last Christmas. Well, I guess I'm not surprised. I know people who hate that song.
Well, it's just like the repetition sometimes gets to you.
Yeah. Well, that's true of a lot of Christmas music.
Oh, yeah.
While millions of people delight in hearing Last Christmas every year, an internet game called Whamageddon. that's pretty funny. Whamageddon encourages players to avoid the song from December 1st to the 24th. The rules are simple. once you hear the original Wham! Version of Last Christmas, remixes and covers don't count, so the Crazy Frog doesn't count. You're out. You then admit defeat on social media with the hashtag Whamageddon and wait for your friends to suffer the same fate. But the rules prohibit you from deliberately sending your friends to Whamhalla. Last Christmas finally charted in America following George Michael's death in 2016. He died on Christmas Day, George Michael. Back in 1984, Last Christmas wasn't released as a commercial single in the United States, and therefore it wasn't eligible for the Billboard Hot 100 chart. However, Billboard changed its rules in 1998, and in the wake of George Michael's unexpected death on Christmas Day in 2016, the song finally made its Hot 100 debut. In December 2018, it re-entered the charts and peaked at number 25. So that was last year.
Yeah, I remember I was at work when we found out, because I would work Christmas morning at the movie theater.
That he passed away?
Yeah, we were getting ready to open. The doors were not quite ready yet, and then all of a sudden I looked at my phone one last time. I was like, oh my God, George Michael is dead.
I was in a movie, and after the movie, was standing in the lobby waiting for my parents. They went into the loo, and I was waiting in the lobby. I turned my phone on, and it immediately, you know, there were messages, because people, my friends know how much I love George Michael, and so my phone was like buzzing, and there were messages all over the place. And you know the movie we went to go see? Because we always go to a movie on Christmas Day. My parents and I always go to a movie on Christmas Day.
What'd you guys see?
I can't remember the name. It's the one where Bryan Cranston's daughter is dating James Franco.
Not him?
Something like that.
Yeah. Why him?
Why him? That's it. That's what we saw. So I sat through that piece of crap and then found out George Michael died.
That's just adding insult to injury in a way, you know?
I have no idea. I mean, we, you know, I don't know whose choice that was to see, but it just opened on, Christmas Day. So, you know, and I was going to eventually have to review it for the radio.
Yeah, to bite the bullet.
George Michael was involved in the Last Christmas movie. November 2019 saw the release of Paul Feig's Last Christmas, a romantic comedy inspired by the song starring Game of Thrones' Emilia Clarke. Producer David Livingstone came up with the idea while George Michael was still alive. And when he pitched the pop star the project, he was given the green light on one condition. Michael stipulated that the actress and author Emma Thompson write the movie. Thompson co-authored the story and the screenplay, and she wound up playing a supporting role. Wow. That's an interesting little tidbit right there.
Big fan of Emma Thompson.
Yeah. Who isn't?
I can't think of a single person that doesn't like Emma Thompson.
You know, it's one of my favorite Emma Thompson performances. Hmm. And it's a movie that not a lot of people have seen. The Tall Guy.
The Tall Guy.
With Jeff Goldblum.
Well, he is a tall guy.
It's a really funny movie. The Tall Guy. I want to say it came out in 1989 or 90, I would say. So it was early Emma Thompson.
Yeah, 1990, directed by Mel Smith.
Yeah.
Screenplay, Richard Curtis.
Yeah. It's a really funny movie. And it's got, I have to say this, one of the most hilarious sex scenes you'll ever see in a movie. And it involved Goldblum and Emma Thompson.
Oh, wow.
It's really a funny movie.
An American actor in London meets a nurse and stars in a musical version of The Elephant Man?
Exactly right. It's really good, man. I'm telling you. You'd love it. I'm telling you, you would love it. I know how UK-centric you can be, and this is...
I'll check it out.
You know. And Emma Thompson is fantastic in it. And again, one of the funniest sex scenes you'll ever see in a movie. Ever. Musical version of Elephant Man. Here's John in Lake Geneva. Hi, John.
Hey, how you guys doing? Great topic. It's really sad about George Michael leaving us way too soon. When Wham first got big, you know, it was the fall here in the United States, right? It was the fall right before that Christmas, 84.
Yeah.
And it Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go is the first big hit, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was it. Well, I mean, they had, I mean, Bad Boys was, it broke the charts a little bit because they're from their first album, but it really was Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, Careless Whisper. Those were the ones, ones that really put them over the top.
I just hated Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. I thought this was so corny and so silly, and I thought, you know, we already had Sean Cassidy. Well, what's this garbage? And then Last Christmas came out, and Everything She Wants came out, and I was just like, oh, wow, okay. You know, yeah. These guys, okay, there's something more going on here. These guys are really talented.
Yeah.
And it's great, great song. I just want to throw a couple. My favorite's Snowfall is a real moody, kind of a wintertime song.
Uh-huh.
And also Christmas Time Is Here.
Oh, sure.
From Charlie, you know, so many people have covered that. And they've all done, most of them all done a really great job. Diana Krall does just a fantastic job with that.
Yeah.
However, I want to say, you know, there's just certain pieces of music out there. Nobody, I've listened to all the versions of Last Christmas. I mean, they have come out anyway. You know, all the ones you mentioned, I've heard nothing comes close to the original.
Yeah, I agree. All right, John, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can't talk about Christmas music and not talk about Charlie Brown. You can't, you know. They ran that special already, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they did maybe a couple weeks ago.
Mm. It's Charlie Brown was, big fan of Peanuts, obviously. But yeah, you can't talk about Christmas music and not mention Charlie Brown.
It's just, oh God, it's so wholesome. It's so beautifully written and beautifully performed too by the Vince Guaraldi Trio.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. We got a bunch of texts that are coming in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're talking about some of the best Christmas songs of all time. Of Can't Smile Without You, a schmaltzy love song recorded by the Carpenters and Barry Manilow, among others. According to Chris Porter, the recording engineer on Last Christmas, the suit was dismissed after a musicologist presented 60-plus songs that have similar chord progressions and melody. I can see there's a similarity. There's no question that there's a similarity.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Between the two.
No doubt.
Last Christmas has been covered by a lot of other artists. Jimmy Eat World, Hilary Duff, Good Charlotte, Ariana Grande, Carly Rae Jepsen, Gwen Stefani, and Taylor Swift are just a few of the artists who have covered Last Christmas over the years. The strangest rendition maybe the 2006 dance version by the Swedish CGI character Crazy Frog. Can we grab that real quick? It reached number 16 on the UK charts. Remember Crazy Frog?
I'd really rather not.
I like Crazy Frog. He's crazy and he's a frog.
But it was just the most annoying thing of all time.
Yeah.
I remember when it was everybody's like cell phone ringtone that ding 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 ding.
Yep.
Like it was just damned awful. All right, here's a little bit of Crazy Frog
doing Last Christmas. What is he doing?
He's getting dropped into a vat of like, I don't know, Christmas juice?
Christmas juice? He's getting dropped into a vat of Christmas juice.
Yeah, I wish I could describe it better, but he's in like Santa's workshop.
Yeah.
He's got one of those like cranes on his head carrying him around and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and now he's met a little girl frog, and she got crushed by a thing. I don't.
Wait,
oh
wait, wait.
God.
Did they kill the girl frog?
It looks like you're just getting stamped or something.
And then dropped into Christmas juice, as you said. There it is.
That is criminal. That's criminal. You can't like that.
Reached number 16 on the UK charts, my friend. It was a top 20 hit.
You know what? I think the UK, they've had it. They're done now. Now you can't put that in the top 20.
Wow,
and still call yourself a nation.
Oh, okay. All right. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back. We're talking about Christmas songs. What are your favorite Christmas songs? of all time. We got a very unusual list of the best Christmas songs according to Time Out Britain. And we want more facts about Wham's Last Christmas by Crazy Frog. Being dropped in Christmas juice, whatever that is. All right, let's take a break. Yeah, man. More very festive Blue Oyster Cult songs to hear in this holiday season. We're talking about some of the best Christmas songs of all time. What are your favorites? And giving you some facts about the classic Wham! Christmas song, Last Christmas, which has actually become a staple now. I remember when it first, I remember when they first released it in 1984. And people were like, why is Wham! Releasing a Christmas song? And now all these years later, they make a movie out of it.
It's the bomb.
Yeah. Some quick texts here. We're talking about, if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're talking text, talking about some of our some of the greatest Christmas songs. 301 area code says, some of my favorite Christmas songs include When a Child is Born, Coventry Carol, and A Cradle in Bethlehem. Steve says, as far as Christmas songs go, it can't get any better than A Holly Jolly Christmas sung by Big Daddy.
Big Daddy?
Holly Jolly Christmas, I mean, the quintessential version of Holly Jolly Christmas is Burl Ives, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, more facts about Last Christmas. Some people make a concerted effort to avoid hearing Last Christmas. Well, I guess I'm not surprised. I know people who hate that song.
Well, it's just like the repetition sometimes gets to you.
Yeah. Well, that's true of a lot of Christmas music.
Oh yeah.
While millions of people delight in hearing Last Christmas every year, an internet game called Whamageddon. that's pretty funny. Whamageddon encourages players to avoid the song from December 1st to the 24th. The rules are simple. Once you hear the original Wham version of Last Christmas, remixes and covers don't count, so the Crazy Frog doesn't count. You're out. You then admit defeat on social media with the hashtag Whamageddon and wait for your friends to suffer the same fate. But the rules prohibit you from deliberately sending your friends to Whamhalla. Last Christmas finally charted in America following George Michael's death in 2016. He died on Christmas Day, George Michael. Back in 1984, Last Christmas wasn't released as a commercial single in the United States, and therefore it wasn't eligible for the Billboard Hot 100 chart. However, Billboard changed its rules in 1998, and in the wake of George Michael's unexpected death on Christmas Day in 2016, the song finally made its Hot 100 debut. In December 2018, it re-entered the charts and peaked at number 25. So that was last year.
Yeah, I remember I was at work when we found out, because I would work Christmas morning at the movie theater.
That he passed away?
Yeah, we were getting ready to open. The doors were not quite ready yet, and then all of a sudden I looked at my phone one last time. I was like, "Oh my God, George Michael is dead."
I was in a movie, and after the movie, was standing in the lobby waiting for my parents. They went into the loo, and I was waiting in the lobby. I turned my phone on, and it immediately, there were messages because my friends know how much I love George Michael, and so my phone was like buzzing, and there were messages all over the place. And you know the movie we went to go see? Because we always go to a movie on Christmas Day. My parents and I always go to a movie on Christmas Day.
What'd you guys see?
I can't remember the name. It's the one where Bryan Cranston's daughter is dating James Franco.
Not him?
Something like that. Yeah.
Why him?
Why him. That's it. That's what we saw. So I sat through that piece of crap and then found out George Michael died.
That's just adding insult to injury in a way, you know?
I have no idea. I mean, we, you know, I don't know whose choice that was to see, but it just opened on, it opened on Christmas Day. So, you know, and I was going to eventually have to review it for the radio.
Yeah, to bite the bullet.
George Michael was involved in the Last Christmas movie. November 2019 saw the release of Paul Feig's Last Christmas, a romantic comedy inspired by the song starring Game of Thrones' Emilia Clarke. Producer David Livingstone came up with the idea while George Michael was still alive. And when he pitched the pop star the project, he was given the green light on one condition. Michael stipulated that the actress and author Emma Thompson write the movie. Thompson co-authored the story and the screenplay, and she wound up playing a supporting role. Wow. That's an interesting little tidbit right there.
Big fan of Emma Thompson.
Yeah. Who isn't?
I can't think of a single person that doesn't like Emma Thompson.
You know, it's one of my favorite Emma Thompson performances. And it's a movie that not a lot of people have seen. The Tall Guy.
The Tall Guy.
With Jeff Goldblum.
Well, he is a tall guy.
It's a really funny movie. The Tall Guy. I want to say it came out in 1989 or 90, I would say. So it was early Emma Thompson.
Yeah, 1990, directed by Mel Smith.
Yeah.
Screenplay, Richard Curtis.
Yeah. It's a really funny movie. And it's got, I have to say this, one of the most hilarious sex scenes you'll ever see in a movie. And it involved Goldblum and Emma Thompson.
Oh, wow.
It's really a funny movie.
An American actor in London meets a nurse and stars in a musical version of The Elephant Man?
Exactly right. It's really good, man. I'm telling you. You'd love it. I'm telling you, you would love it. I know how UK-centric you can be, and this is...
I'll check it out.
You know. And Emma Thompson's fantastic in it. And again, one of the funniest sex scenes you'll ever see in a movie. Ever. Musical version of Elephant Man. Here's John in Lake Geneva. Hi, John.
Hey, how you guys doing? Great topic. It's really sad about George Michael leaving us way too soon. When Lamb first got big, you know, it was the fall here in the United States, right? It was the fall right before that Christmas, 84.
Yeah.
And it Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go is the first big hit, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was it. Well, I mean, Bad Boys was, it broke the charts a little bit because they're from their first album, but it really was Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, Careless Whisper. Those were the ones that really put them over the top.
I just hated Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. I thought this was so corny and so silly, and I thought, you know, we already had Sean Cassidy. What's this garbage? And then Last Christmas came out. And Everything She Wants came out, and I was just like, oh, wow, okay. You know, yeah. There's something more going on here. These guys are really talented.
Yeah.
It's great, great song. I just want to throw a couple of my favorites. Snowfall is a real moody, kind of a wintertime song.
Uh-huh.
And also Christmas Time Is Here.
Oh, sure.
From Charlie, you know, so many people have covered that. And they've all done, most of them all done a really great job. Diana Krall does just a fantastic job with that.
Yeah.
However, I want to say, you know, there's just certain pieces of music out there. Nobody, I've listened to all the versions of Last Christmas. I mean, that have come out anyway, you know, all the ones you mentioned, I've heard nothing comes close to the original.
Yeah, I agree. All right, John, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can't talk about Christmas music and not talk about Charlie Brown. You can't, you know. They ran that special already, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they did maybe a couple weeks ago.
Mm. It's, Charlie Brown was, big fan of Peanuts, obviously. But yeah, you can't talk about Christmas music and not mention Charlie Brown.
It's just, oh, God. It's so wholesome. It's so beautifully written and beautifully performed, too, by the Vince Guaraldi Trio.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. We got a bunch of texts that are coming in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're talking about some of the best Christmas songs of all time. And Megan says, I love Christmas. Baby, Please Come Home. And I love Leighton Meester's version. You gotta love Leighton Meester.
She's in Gossip Girl, right?
Yeah, that was her, come on.
Fame.
She's Blair.
I just keep forgetting how seriously you take Gossip Girl.
I love Gossip Girl.
I've liked Gossip Girl in the past.
The show rules. Come on, man.
I'll give it up for Chuck Bass.
Chuck Bass rules. I'm Chuck Bass. You gotta love that, man. Let's see. 765 area code says, I believe in Father Christmas by Greg Lake. Father Christmas by the Kinks, which we just played a little bit ago, and Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight, the Ramones. That is a great song. A great song. Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight by the Ramones. And it's actually in this article. It comes in at number, out of the 50, it comes in at number 49. Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight by the Ramones. Joey Ramone's plea to his lover to put their scrapping aside for the holidays is undoubtedly the punk Christmas anthem. Beneath the lyrics, it's a typically fiery Ramones riff that's more likely to fuel high tensions rather than ease them around the warring dinner table. Yeah. I love that song. Do you have it? I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight. I'll wear a Santa and a sleigh until the wise and old sleigh. I love the Ramones.
Amazing.
I just love the Ramones. That's such a great song. 708 area code texts in, and you guys can text in and call at 312-981-7200 as we discuss great Christmas songs. Elvis, Blue Christmas, classic. Oh, ho, 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 blue. You gotta love that, man. The Elvis Christmas album, there's a couple of them, but the Elvis Christmas album is a true classic. 847 area code says, I saw Bruce Springsteen play Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. Remember they included that on the list of worst Christmas songs?
I can't remember what they had to say about it. They called it like...
Yeah, what did they call? I can't remember now.
I'll find out.
Okay. Squat says, I love Merry Christmas Darling by the Carpenters from one of the sweetest voices around. It's sad. Someone should have given her a sandwich. Okay, Squat.
Easy there, killer.
She had the Karen Carpenter had the voice of an angel. She had the voice of an angel, and that is a beautiful Christmas song. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more Christmas songs. 312-981-7200 right here on WGN. What is going on here?
I don't know, man, but it rules.
So the first set of twofers and the second set of twofers, basically black and blue.
Yeah, yeah. Hail Santa.
What is going on? Who requested the Sabbath?
That's coming to us from our good pal, Big Ed.
All right. Not that I'm complaining.
No, no.
Because, you know, Sabbath is one of the greatest bands ever. But it's just a little weird since we're talking about like Christmas songs and getting into some Christmas stuff as we approach the holiday before we take a break. Blasting some Sabbath on this festive morning.
Get those devil horns out, wow. Kids, you know.
All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we're here till 4 a.m. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are talking about Christmas songs. And what are the best ones? So, let's see. From late November onwards, Christmas songs become inescapable. You'll hear them at any Christmas party, while you're doing your Christmas shopping, and pretty much anytime you turn on a TV or radio. When it comes to making your own Christmas playlist, you'll probably want a perfect blend of the tried and true festive favorites. So would they put together a list of some of the best? And this is from the British version of Time Out. So, They mention Little Drummer Boy, Peace on Earth by Bing Crosby and David Bowie. It's really great. It's really great. And they never met before that. I think they only rehearsed once. Yeah. We got a bunch of texts coming in. 219 area code says, I work at a casino and it sucks. All we're playing now is Christmas music, but it's all secular. There's no Silent Night or Little Drummer Boy. Don't mean to be preachy, but as the saying goes, he's the reason for the season. 815 area code says, hey, Nick, the song Christmas Vacation from the movie by the same name, you can't listen to that song without getting into the spirit of Christmas. And also the song All I Want for Christmas Is You, but not the Mariah Carey version, rather the version sung by the young girl in Love Actually. Who sings it in Love Actually? I don't even remember. Who sings Love? Who sings All I Want for Christmas Is You in Love Actually?
I think it's the little girl that the
little girl,
yeah, that he's in love with, and she's like American or something. I don't know.
I don't remember.
It's not one that I watch a lot.
No, I've only seen it once all the way through. Love Actually. I mean, I like it. I thought it was good. 630 area code says Tom Petty's Christmas song. I don't know what it's called, but it's awesome tune. What's Tom Petty's Christmas song? You got to remind me here.
I'm trying to think. Is it Christmas All Over Again? I think that's it.
Is that it?
Yeah, let me...
Let's see.
We'll get a little bit here in just a second. I don't... Yeah, he's not someone that I attributed a Christmas song to, because I know, you know, a lot of big rock artists did it, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like that. That's a good one.
It's great. It's Tom Petty. Has Tom Petty ever did anything bad? No.
I don't think so. Well, I got a little tired of Free Falling after a while.
Yeah, but that's not his fault.
That's true. Wait, what do you mean it's not his fault?
He didn't play it over and over and over again.
All right.
Listen, Tom Petty, to me, was... And I can't believe he's dead, too. Tom Petty, to me, was one of the most... consistently good rock artists of all time.
I'd be a liar if I said I didn't own Damn the Torpedoes. That's a great album.
Everything the guy released was good. Some of it was really great. All of it was good. He never released anything that wasn't good. One of the most consistent rock songwriters of all time. 219 area code enjoys listening to Porky Pig singing Blue Christmas. Can we get that?
I'll pull it.
Porky Pig singing Blue Christmas. 815 area code says the Charlie Brown Christmas is... Oh, it's on tonight. Oh. It's on ABC tonight. Oh. It's weird because you can get it on DVD or whatever. But there's just something about some of these Christmas specials, watching them when they're being broadcast, like with the commercials.
Yeah, it's special.
It's like Rich Man, Poor Man, and Beautiful Girls. When yeah. When Michael Rapaport's going to the reunion and Matt Dillon is staying home and he's watching Rich Man, Poor Man, all five parts back to back to back, and Michael Rapaport, it's like, oof, that's one of my favorite scenes ever in a movie. Because when I was a kid, I loved Rich Man, Poor Man. I watched it. And so just like Michael Rapaport's reaction, he might not go to the high school reunion because Rich Man, Poor Man is on. And he goes, you got to tape it for me. And Matt Dillon goes, no, you can't tape Rich Man, Poor Man. You got to watch it on TV with the commercials like everybody else. He's like, yeah, you're right. Ooh.
here's a little Porky Pig.
Porky Pig.
I'll have a blue at Christmas. Without you, I feel so blue. You're just thinking about you. It'll be decorations of red on a green Christmas tree.
Oh, man. Mel Blanc, man. Mel Blanc. What was that recorded? There were people in the room laughing.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't know.
I think that hold on. That might have been someone else doing it. Here's yeah. Yeah, I guess they must have been recording him doing it.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
That's nuts.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Oh, here's a great one that they mentioned in the article. Let's have this queued up for when we come back after the break, because we're going to break here for news. And everybody hang on. If you're on the line, please hold. If you are texting in, please do so. 312-981-7200. What are some of your favorite Christmas songs of all time? Let's get to, I mean, obviously we'll play the request, the twofer, first, but get Run Rudolph Run by Chuck Berry ready.
Oh, man, Vic would love that.
Yes, he would. Yes, he would. So, all right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up right after this. All right, we're going to continue talking about your favorite Christmas songs, best Christmas songs of all time. We want to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200 right now. Christmas, everybody, from Iron Man. Hi, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WG, and that's 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs. Get your requests in, 312-981-7200. Welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here till 4. We're going to be talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies. They were ranked from worst to best. So we're going to talk a little Arnie. And also we're going to talk about actors and actresses who've changed their appearance, altered their bodies for different roles in movies. But right now we're talking Christmas music. What are some of your favorite Christmas songs? Ones that you listen to all the time, even if they're unusual. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, brother. What's going on, man? I haven't talked to you for a while.
All right. What's up?
All right. Well, being that you're putting the Sabs on, I'm thinking Van Halen, the Cradle Will Rock and Take Your Whiskey Home, which is on the same album. And those are Christmas songs.
Oh, okay.
And, okay, well, if you used to drink. You don't drink anymore. But anyway, and when you were talking Tom Petty previously.
Yeah.
And I find it to be very ironic how Tom Petty, Mr. Mark Knopfler, and Bob Dylan all sound the same.
They do sound similar. There's no question about it. They do. They do. All right. Hey, have a good one, Chris. Take care, buddy. Thanks for calling. The Sabs.
I gotta use that in the future.
Oh, you've never heard that before?
The Sabs?
Yeah.
Not really. I thought that was a make of car.
No, it's a... Some people refer to Black Sabbath as the Sabs.
No, it's good. I like it.
Yeah. A bunch of text here. 773 area code says, if you're looking for a great rock Christmas song, how about Merry Christmas Will Do by Material Issue and the late, great Jim Ellison? So, do we have Run, Rudolph, Run?
Oh, yeah.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind.
So good. Here's what they say about that song in the article about the great Christmas songs. Recorded at the height of his powers, Chuck Berry rolls out his characteristic frenzied 12-bar blues in reverence to everyone's favorite reindeer. Despite not even managing to break the top 50 when it was released first, it has become an enduring holiday favorite and spawned plenty of covers. How did that not make the top 50? Come on, man.
These darn kids.
708 area code sends in a text that says, Kenny Rogers, Children Go Where I Send Thee. 847 area code, John Lennon, So This Is Christmas. 773 area code. Not exactly a Christmas song, but I love "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." So more texts coming in. They mention in the article here, 8 Days of Christmas by Destiny's Child as being a really great song. With an injection of sass and unabashed materialism, Beyonce, Kelly, and Michelle turn a cozy old holiday favorite into a bumping R&B Christmas carol for our times, and it's a fine achievement. I don't know if I've ever heard 8 Days of Christmas by Destiny's Child. Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney was crowned last week when we talked about the worst Christmas songs of all time. That's the one that came out on top. Was Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney, the worst.
I don't mind it. I really don't.
Oh, my God.
Wow, 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 wow.
I can't stand that song. And I love Paul McCartney. But I can't stand that song. So, all right. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how y'all doing? Hey, Nick.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing much. I just, not too long ago, listened to a good game between New Orleans and the Colts on the radio, and I tuned y'all on.
All right.
Yeah, you want to know what my favorite Christmas song is?
Sure. What is it?
You remember New Edition song is Christmas All Over the World?
Oh, yeah. That's a great song.
I love that song. Yeah. If you have any time on this broadcast, play it for me.
All right, we'll try to get some of it on there, Chris. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, New Edition. How about that? Next one in this article that they mention, of course, is Santa Claus Goes Straight to the Ghetto by James Brown, which, of course, is a great song. Here's what they say about it. The Godfather of Funk gives Father Christmas his marching orders, insisting that he head straight to the ghetto and tell him James Brown sent you. It may raise a smile. There's something serious at the heart of this all horns blazing tune. JB wants the kids on the wrong side of the tracks to enjoy the sort of Christmas he never did. Great song. A great song. So, talking about our favorite Christmas songs, which ones are you fond of? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. Here's Louise on WGN. Hi, Louise.
Yeah, hi, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Okay, this goes back a long time, like I was telling Tom, but it's Alan Sherman, 12 Days of Christmas.
Oh, you got to love Alan Sherman.
I know. Yeah. I used to have that record, and I played it till it wore out,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember the album. I remember the album, My Son, the Nut. Alan Sherman, My Son, the Nut. And, of course, Hello, Mudda, Hello, Fada.
Yeah.
That's the big one. But, yeah, 12 Days of Christmas by Alan Sherman, classic.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the most well-known Christmas hip-hop tunes and one of the best, too. Run DMC's witty Crimbo tale is the story of Run finding Santa's bill-stuffed wallet in the park on Christmas Eve. But I'd never steal from Santa, because that ain't right, says Run, in a fine show of festive spirit. It all makes for an ultimately catchy number that provides you with a bit of bounce if you're feeling flat after too much Slade or too many mince pies. Let's see. More texts here. Weird Al, Christmas at Ground Zero.
That one's about, I think it's about Chernobyl.
What is WGN? Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
All right, what's up?
Great. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, a radio station in Milwaukee here played David Hasselhoff's Christmas album, and they played it continuously day.
Oh, God.
No, it was actually pretty good. It, like, grew on you.
Uh-huh.
After I listened to it for a little while, it was great. Hearing the Hoff sing Christmas tunes? Fabulous.
Let's dig up a song from that. Mike, thanks for the call, man.
Great.
All right, bye. Up in Milwaukee, they played nothing but Hasselhoff.
Feliz Navidad.
This is Hasselhoff.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y
songs that Hasselhoff could record. He records this one. The least Latin man on the planet?
Yeah, he's about as white as they come.
Of course, the version that Jose Feliciano does is fantastic.
Of course. It's an amazing Christmas.
Classic.
Yeah.
Hasselhoff.
He probably listens to that when he's running down the beach in slow motion.
God, Hasselhoff.
Hey, man, don't hassle the Hoff.
Yeah. Hey, he brought down the Berlin Wall. He's responsible for bringing down the Berlin Wall. I don't know if you know that.
I forgot. And then Al Gore invented the internet.
That's exactly right. I just remember the footage of him playing at the Berlin Wall when it was coming down, the night it was coming down. And he's got, like, lights on his jacket. You know, like, lit- like Chris Jericho. He's got, like, lights on his jacket.
He's American treasure.
Well, they love him in Germany.
They do. They do, they do, they do.
Don't hassle the Hoff. Good Lord. Fly James John says, Silent Night by the Temptations is a good song, and it shows off their harmony. Carrie says, Pretty Little Dolly is an awful song, but Uncle Bobby played it, so I'll give it a pass. Okay. 708 area code says, Spike Jones, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, which was released in 1948. 864 area code texts in, How about Jeff Foxworthy in 12 Days of Redneck Christmas?
Jeff Foxworthy. My dad used to love those blue collar comedy tour guys.
Oh, come on, really?
I have no idea why. I would complain. He would he used to have like X or Sirius back really when it first started.
Yeah.
And that was one of the channels is like blue collar comedy radio or something like that.
Oh, come on, man.
And it was nothing but Larry the Cable Guy and Ron White and Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah.
He just found them so damn funny.
I don't
beg him, like, please, we have a million channels on this. Put on some music. He said, no, we're listening. Listening to the blue collar comedy tour.
I don't even understand that. I don't even understand that.
You might be a redneck when.
Yeah. If you got a working TV sitting on top of a broke TV, you might be a redneck.
Woo!
People go nuts.
Yeah.
What was that show? Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah.
That he hosted that, right?
He did. He did for a minute. And now he hosts like a Bible show on GSN.
Oh yeah, like GSN. It's a Bible quiz show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Leviticus 25, right. 17.
Right. I would not do well on that show.
The path of the righteous man is beset on both sides.
All right, Samuel. All right, Jules. How about Merry Christmas Everybody by Slade?
That's a great song.
Let's hear that one.
Have you never heard
it?
Yeah,
no, I've heard it. I just haven't. It was just mentioned in the article here.
Oh, God. That is a classic.
Merry Christmas. Well, Slade rules. I think we've discussed how much Slade rules before on this show. So.
Merry Christmas. Everybody's having fun.
Great song.
It's a really positive song, too, I think.
Slade's awesome, man. Just a great band. How about Santa Claus is Coming to Town by the Jackson 5?
Preferred version.
Great version of that song. Driving Home for Christmas by Chris Rea. What is that? This loungy number about being stuck in Christmas traffic from husky-voiced housewife's favorite Chris Rea has had lasting appeal. Not only has it charted twice in the UK, reaching 53 in 1988 and 33 in 2007, but it even cracked Norway's top three a few years ago. Clearly, people of all generations and nationalities are able to enjoy this harmless slice of Christmas cheese. What's it called?
Driving Home for Christmas.
Driving Home for Christmas.
Driving Home for Christmas.
Oh, God.
Oh, I can't wait to see those faces.
Oh, my God.
Driving
I'm driving home for Christmas.
Got a beer open in my lap.
Hey, by the way, can I just say something?
You can.
You know that guy in the Coors Light commercial who cracks open a beer in the shower? He's an alcoholic. Just wanted to say that. I wanted to make that clear. Guy cracks open a beer, drinks a Coors Light in the shower. Alcoholic.
You know, there's been a recent trend of breweries brewing beers perfect for the shower. And they're legit. Like, they're doing it.
No, come on.
Yeah. No.
Listen, I never even drank a beer in the shower when I was a drinker. I just wanted to make that statement. It just popped into my head. The guy drinking the Coors Light in the shower, alcoholic. I just thought I'd let everybody know.
He should walk out from the shower with a towel on, the beer in his hand, and there's an intervention.
In the all of his family are sitting there. You got a problem, dude.
Hold on. Let me just get back into the shower real quick.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just wanted to point that out. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll wrap up the Christmas song stuff, and then we're going to get into some Arnold. Arnold Schwarzenegger, everybody. We're going to rank his movies. We want to hear from you guys, and we'll do it right after we break.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a beer. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two turtlenecks and a beer. Okay, good. On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three French toast, two turtlenecks, and a beer. Okay, that should be more there.
Who requested the McKenzies?
That is coming to us from Steve.
Nice choice. I used to listen to that album. I had that album, the Bob and Doug McKenzie album. I had it. I listened to it when I was in high school. I wore it out.
I forgot. It's Rick Moranis and
Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas, that's it.
Legendary. And they got Geddy Lee to be on the album to sing the... Are you not familiar with this, Tom? Are you familiar with Take Off? Oh, okay. Because you made a face when I said Geddy Lee. Yeah, they got Geddy Lee on there. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up at 5 o'clock, it's Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking Christmas songs. That's a great one. The other thing that I remember from that album... I remember a lot of it because I listen to it all the time. But one of my favorite bits on the Bob and Doug McKenzie album, and by the way, Strange Brew is a great movie. I don't care what, and I don't care what anybody says. Strange Brew, the Bob and Doug McKenzie movie, great movie. And they got Max von Sydow to be in it. So, but my favorite cut on the Bob and Doug McKenzie album, because that's a great. But the best one was The Beer Hunter.
Yes.
Have you heard The Beer Hunter?
The Beer Hunter,
that's where they take a six-pack of beer, they shake one of them up real bad, they put them in a bag, and then each one, and they have to pull the can out and open it next to their face. That's the...
You got to wear a bandana and scream while
you do
it, too.
The Beer Hunter. One of those beers is going to explode right all over your head. The Beer Hunter. All right. Let's see. Sleigh Ride by the Ronettes. Now, the Ronnie Spector... She's, the best. And Phil Spector's Christmas album, that's a classic Christmas album.
One of the best.
Oh, yeah.
Really, in terms of just the songs. They never get annoying. That's the thing about them. I never found any of those songs to get annoying. I just want to listen to them again and again.
Yeah. I love those. I love that album. We used to play, they would put holiday music on the jukebox at Simon's.
Of course.
They would put holiday CDs on. That one got played the most. That and the Charlie Brown. Those were the two that got played the most. Sitting at the bar, drinking your glug, listening to the Phil Spector album. Fun times over at Simon's. Hey, do you know that Broham, Mike Steven, did his show from Simon's?
Really?
Outside the Loop?
No way.
Yeah.
I was looking
on the website. I think it was just this past Saturday.
Oh, I got to go back and
listen. Or it was on tape or something, because they're not open. He's on at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he did a show from Simon's, live from Simon's.
Oh, good old Mike Steven.
Yeah. Broham.
See, I never knew him as Broham because...
That was a long time ago. That was when he produced my show. He produced my show. He produced my Sunday show.
And I board opted for him a couple times at Loyola.
And
outside the loop
Andy Herman. Did you ever meet Andy Herman?
I didn't get to meet him, but I know Andy.
Andy
know
was my producer for years. I think I worked with Andy for 11 years. He was my first, like, producer for my regular shows. And he was the Count. The Count and Broham. Those were the nicknames. The Count came from because he was on, we used to, Carl Amare did the Twilight Zone radio dramas.
Right, yeah.
And so I was in two of them, and so was Andy. And Andy played a poker dealer named The Count in one episode. So that's how he got the nickname The Count. Broham just became Broham because I told a story about a guy who used to call everybody Broham. An idiot I went to school with. Open the door, Broham! Because I was on the L, and this kid I went to grade school with, I'm not making this up. His name's Carl Jung, and it's spelled J-U-N-G. I'm not making that up.
Oh, analyzing your dreams.
Yeah. So I went to school with a guy named Carl Jung, and he hung out with a Native American kid named John Brokenleg. That was his name. So he and Brokenleg, I was on the L going downtown. We get to the Southport stop, and I'm sitting there, and they're not opening the doors right away. And Brokenleg was huge. He was a big kid. I mean, I think they held him back like four grades or something. He was a monster.
Oh my God.
And Carl Jung was like, that weaselly little jerk that hangs out with the scary kid in The Christmas Story? You know that little guy?
Yeah.
That's kind of like what it would look like. So they start kicking the doors. Brokenleg starts kicking the doors, and he's screaming, "Open the door, Broham!" And I'm sitting there going, "Oh my God, that's Brokenleg and Jung." And I didn't want to see them, but that I told that story to Mike about "Open the door, Broham," and he fell on the floor laughing, and so we just started calling him Broham.
You know, I think I actually have that album at home, Brokenham and Jung.
Yeah. Yeah. Broken leg.
What did I say?
Broken ham? It said hand. Broken leg. John Broken leg.
Yeah. Pardon me.
All right. We'll wrap this up. We got a bunch of texts here. Nick, a few years ago, one of the Milwaukee radio stations would play Scott Weiland, the deceased singer of Stone Temple Pilots' Christmas album, all day long, and it actually isn't bad. I didn't know Weiland recorded a Christmas album. He's seriously one of my favorite frontmen. I love his voice. My favorites are Santa's Messing with the Kid by Eddie C. Campbell and Merry Christmas Everybody by Slade, which we played a little bit earlier. 219 area code said Silver Bells by the Yobs. 414 area code says Dwight Porter Music Box Christmas for background music. Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song. You gotta love the Hanukkah song. You know, it's celebrated, it just turned 25.
Wow.
Yeah. It's great. It's great.
Grab your yarmulke.
Mike from Manuka says, John Denver's, oh God, please don't get drunk on Christmas. We played that the last.
We did. We did.
I can't even believe that's a thing.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk on Christmas. Thank God It's Christmas by Queen. Oh, by Queen. Yeah. Geddy Lee, $5 is $5. from the McKenzie brothers. And my favorite part of that song is when they realize that they should add "on a tree." That's right. Bob and Doug, man. You've seen Strange Brew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Classic. All right, let's break here. We got the news coming up. And then we're going to talk about Ernie.
We agreed to say that, but take off.
Say your name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Okay, so good day. Our topic today is music.
That's right, because my brother and I are now experts in the field.
Yeah,
eh?
Right, because we're a band now.
God, this is just seriously bringing me back to when I was 16 years old. I mean, like memories are just flying back into my head. I listen to it all the time.
Yeah, take off, you hoser.
Oh, my God. I saw Strange Brew like 10 times in the theater. And it goes without saying, SCTV, this legendary show. Absolutely legendary. I miss Rick Moranis. You know, I know that he had some tragedy in his life and dropped out, you know, and dropped out of show business. But, you know, a few months ago I screened Ghostbusters. And he's unbelievably funny in that movie. Rick Moranis. He's unbelievably funny in it.
You come over, we've got some mineral water.
I love when he walks out of his apartment and he gets locked out. The other thing is when he's all possessed and he's got that, they put that stupid like colander thing on his head and he's like handing things to Harold Ramis. yeah. But he had some bad stuff happen in his life, and I totally understand why he got out of the business. But I would love to see him come back just to make one movie. I mean, I've seen Honey, I Shrunk the Kids like 5,000 times. Didn't like Blew Up the Kids very much, but Shrunk the Kids is great. Really great movie. I can imagine, because when that movie came out, 89 it came out, so I was like 24 or something. So I was an adult when I saw it. I can't imagine how much fun it would be to see that movie as a kid.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, how much fun is that movie to be? You're like 8 years old and you see Honey, I Shrunk the Kids for the first time.
It's rad.
Yeah.
And then you find out he made this other movie. It's called Reanimator. Like, it was written by Stuart Gordon, right?
Yeah, it was written by Stuart Gordon. Yeah. I haven't seen Stuart in a long time. I've had him on the show several times. Chicagoan. Great guy. Very cool dude. Very, very cool dude. And obviously talented. Reanimator. I remember the first time I saw Reanimator, I could not believe what I was seeing. It was funny because, Stuart was known in the theater world in the early 80s and 70s and doing storefront theater. And so we knew who he was. So I'm at the screening with like Dan Geyer and Roy Leonard. We're all in the screening room. And you've seen Reanimator, obviously.
Yeah, a million times.
Now, can you imagine sitting next to Roy Leonard watching Reanimator?
Was he just like disgusted?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He laughed a lot.
Yeah.
And, he knew Stuart, so he was like, wow, this guy's crazy. I don't think we all knew how crazy Stuart Gordon was until Reanimator. I completely fell in love with Barbara Crampton. My God. She's awesome, by the way. She's been to Flashback like 3 or 4 times. Lovely woman. Really, really good to her fans. Like, really goes out of her way, takes time to talk to the fans and stuff like that. We'll do, take pictures, whatever. She's awesome. She's awesome, Barbara Crampton. But yeah, Stuart Gordon, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Because that came out after Reanimator. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids came out after Reanimator, and I was like, is this credit correct?
Yeah, when he was in town for Society,
yeah,
a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And when he was on, we had him on the show. He was talking about selling that to Disney. I'm like, how does this guy, who's known for like some of the most shocking stuff I've ever seen on film, go walk into Disney and be like, yeah, here's a great family comedy, and it really is.
Yeah. Do you see Robot Jocks?
No, Robot Jocks.
It's a giant robot movie, a battling robot movie that he made. Robot Jocks, J-O-X. Robot Jocks.
Oh, my God.
It's great. You like giant robot movies where they knock stuff over and beat the hell out of each other? This is a good one, man.
Absolutely.
And it's Stuart Gordon.
Gary Graham.
I remember he made that movie. It came out, was rated PG, and people were like, what's wrong with Stuart Gordon? What year is Robot Jocks? 90?
Yeah, 1990. November 21st, 1990. Yeah. 85 minutes long.
It's fun.
Oh, that flopped.
Oh, yeah, big time. Big time. But if, listen, I know that you like that genre.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm absolutely
gonna
watch it.
It's a giant robot movie where they beat the hell out of each other and knock stuff over. How is that not? They have big tournaments. It's about big tournaments that they have, the Robot Jocks.
Well, it's the same thing talking about Deep Rising. I never got the chance to see it.
Yeah. You a Pacific Rim fan?
Oh, big Pacific Rim fan.
I like them both.
Not a fan of the second one. It was okay.
I thought the battles in the second one were good. But I love the first one. The first one rules.
That was my boy, GDT.
Eric Childress prefers the second one.
That's definitely a feeling. That's a take.
He said that he prefers it because the battles, he hated the battles in Pacific Rim because they all took place in the dark and rain. And he says, at least in the second one, it's bright and sunny, and you can actually see the robots.
I'll give him that. I'll give him that.
I saw it in IMAX 3D. But my friends and I, we were at when I used to hang out at Ricochet's, all of us were like kaiju guys and, you know, loved all of that crap. And so, like, six of us from Ricochet's just went. We went to the Skokie. IMAX, saw it in IMAX 3D. We were like, yeah! It was so good.
I will say I got tired of that trailer really quick. Because being in the movie theater, that played, and it's just like, it's the same song over and over. They're like, war ready. Like,
yeah.
It's just so annoying.
Yeah. And then you get to hear Idris Elba, you get to hear Stringer Bell say that the apocalypse has been canceled.
Yeah, we're canceling the apocalypse.
Okay, Stringer.
Yeah. It's over.
Okay, Stringer Bell. You know, it's insane how many people in The Wire are British that you didn't know they were British. Like, three-quarters of that cast is British. Like, I didn't know Idris. I didn't know Stringer Bell was British. I saw him on a talk show, and I'm like, what is he talking like that for? I didn't know McNulty was British.
Yeah. That was a real shocker.
Like,
was,
what is happening? What, huh?
I guess it's easier to do a Baltimore accent
right,
than it is to do a British one.
That's absolutely right. Okay. So we've got every Arnold Schwarzenegger. Speaking of accents. Oh, see what I did there? Hold on a minute now. Hold it.
All right. Hall of Famer right there.
He's got an accent. I didn't know if you know that or not. See, I come up with witticisms like that. That's why I got a plaque in the sidewalk across the river on the Walk of Fame. That's why. Because of like that joke I just made.
That's how you get a plaque
that's
down by the river.
That's how you get on the Walk of Fame. but Arnold Schwarzenegger has made 41 movies. That's a pretty hefty amount of money, amount of movies. So we're going to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and this guy, Matt Singer, wrote this article. Matt Singer, he ranked all the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and he ranked them from worst to best. And while I agree with some of his rankings, I do not agree with number one. I like number one very much, trust me. It's a terrific movie. I don't think it's Arnold's best, though. So, I knew this guy was going to call in. Here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right, what's up?
Yeah, this, I'm glad you're doing this. This guy's always been my idol, so I thought I'd mention my top five favorites of
right.
Arnold. Okay, my number five is definitely Twins.
Uh-huh.
Okay, number four is Predator. Number three is Raw Deal, which was filmed in Chicago. And number two is, of course, T2. And number one, I have to put this on number one because this is the movie that may have been an action star. I'll just talk about Terminator, but this one may have been an action star for sure. And it came out in around the same time as Rambo, which started the whole rivalry with him and Stallone, Commando.
Commando. All right. Those are good choices. All right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
I love Commando. It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
Is that the one where he throws a pipe through a dude and says, time to let off some steam?
I don't know because I get my quips mixed up, but that's where Alyssa Milano is his daughter. And, like, he holds, you know who David Patrick Kelly is?
Yeah.
Okay, he holds David Patrick Kelly by his leg over, like, the side of a mountain. And he says, you remember when I said I'll kill you last? I lied.
You're a funny guy, Sully. Yeah. I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
Right. I lied. Commando is just full of those quips. It just got ridiculous after a while because every Arnold movie after Commando had to have some smart-ass quip that he has to make after he kills somebody or shoots somebody. Like, I think at one point he whips a knife at some guy in Predator.
Yeah,
stick around.
Get to the chopper. Do it. Kill me now. Do it. What are you waiting for?
So, needless to say, ranking at the bottom is Hercules in New York from 1970. Have you ever seen this movie?
I have not. I've heard about it, but I've not.
Man, first of all, the voice that they dub over his voice, ridiculous. It's almost as ridiculous as the voice they dub over Lou Ferrigno. Have you ever seen the Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies?
Yeah, we talked about it a while back, so okay. I ended up seeing them, and I was blown away.
They're seriously two of the worst movies you'll ever see in your life, and they're absolutely hilarious. It's like Fever Pitch, and then the two Hercules movies. So, and not the Jimmy Fallon, Drew Barrymore Fever Pitch, but the Ryan O'Neal 1985 Fever Pitch that no one has seen ever. It's the worst movie of all time, and the most entertaining worst movie ever made. And the Hercules, Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies are right on the tail. So, all right, let's break, and we'll come back, and we're talking Arnold 312-981-7200 here on WGN.
bound up and torn. He claimed he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby, yes, baby. Woo-hoo, baby, having me some fun tonight. Yeah, well, long tall Sally, she's Bibble Species guy.
Everything right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here till 4 a.m., and as we are every weekday morning. And then at 4 o'clock, our good buddies over at the at Bradley Place will simulcast the WGN early morning news on from Channel 9. And then at 5 o'clock, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. All righty, then. We're talking Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Matt Singer put together this list, and he ranked all of his movies from worst to best. We got a couple of texts coming in. By the way, Getty Lee said $10 is $10. Take off. And there you go. So Hercules in New York is just, it's ridiculous. All right, next one that they say is terrible, the Jane Mansfield story. It's a TV movie. Arnold looked a lot more comfortable 10 years later in this biopic about the life of the famous starlet. Casting Schwarzenegger as the narrator of this story, given his command of the English accent in the early 80s, is not the choice I would have made. Still, you can see flashes of an emerging screen presence, even in this very, very forgettable TV movie. Yeah, the Jane Mansfield story. I can't remember who played Jane Mansfield. Can you look that up? Jane Mansfield story from 1980? TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember who played Jane Mansfield.
Lonnie Anderson.
Oh, my God, of course.
Lonnie Anderson and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's got the makings of a classic right there.
Good old Lonnie.
Around the World in 80 Days from 2004. This painfully unfunny update of the Jules Verne classic with Arnold as a Turkish prince was Schwarzenegger's final film for 6 years, ostensibly because he became the governor of California shortly thereafter. No one could blame him for wanting to take a break after this disaster. If this is the best he could do in 2004, he was better off in Sacramento. I did not see this version of Around the World in 80 Days.
It's got Steve Coogan.
Oh, that's right. Coogan's in it, right.
Jackie Chan.
Yeah, that's it. Jackie Chan and Steve Coogan. That's right. Yeah, I never saw
it. It's pretty bad.
But I love both those guys, though. How about this? Killing Gunther. Did you see Killing Gunther?
I never saw it, but we played a song from it once.
Yeah, we did. We did. I've never seen it either. Taron Killam directed it.
He did.
SNL alum Taron Killam's directorial debut squanders a funny supporting turn from Arnold as the world's greatest assassin. Schwarzenegger's barely in the movie. He's like the Poochie of all other... he's like the Poochie all the other characters are talking about when he's not on screen. And his Gunther sings a terrible country song. Can we find that song? Maybe hear a little bit of it? Killing Gunther?
Killing Gunther. I don't know if I'll ever watch this. I don't know if I can.
The only thing that made me curious about it was that it's Taron Killam. And I love Taron Killam. And, you know, and I wanted to see how he would direct. And, you know, I think he's really fun. He's in the movie, too, and he co-wrote it. Who's he married to?
He is married to Kobe Smulders.
Right, from How I Met Your... What the show she was just on got canceled.
Wait, Stumptown got canceled?
I think it got canceled.
Aw, darn.
Yeah.
I kind of like that show.
So Gunther sings a terrible... Do we have the song? The song from Killing Gunther?
Rockin' body, pretty face, attitude bigger than the sand and place. It's troubling when she's lovely, so give a white berth. Can't help but love her, she's the salt of the earth. Now I wasn't expecting a full-fledged passion assault. Yeah, and it's all her fault. When she's around, I can't help myself.
That's pretty great. That's pretty great. In what context did we play it the last time? What were we talking about?
That is a really good question. I don't remember. I think it might have been Wild Card Wednesday.
And someone, and somebody just requested it?
Yeah, somebody wanted to hear it.
All right.
Got to have a wide barrel.
Next, Scavenger Hunt from 1979. Arnold only appears in a couple of minutes of this mundane mad world knockoff about a bunch of teams on a scavenger hunt that will decide who inherits a millionaire's estate. He plays a gym fitness instructor, barks orders at Tony Randall, and accidentally knocks him out of a window with a medicine ball. See, I'd pay to see that. I'd pay to see Arnold Schwarzenegger knocking Tony Randall out of a window with a medicine ball. I remember Scavenger Hunt. There was a time when those movies, those like Scavenger Hunt movies, like It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, there was a time in the late 70s when that was like a sub genre. And they made like three or four of them. There was one called Midnight Madness, one of Michael J. Fox's first movies. The great Eddie Deason. You familiar with Eddie Deason?
I don't think so. Eddie Deason.
Okay. He's the guy who played a nerd in every movie. Glasses, a voice like this.
Oh, God.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he's in Grease.
He's in I Want to Hold Your Hand.
He's in the Polar Express.
Yes, he is, because Zemeckis loves him.
He's that kid that everybody kind of wanted to beat to death.
Yeah.
He talks like this!
He's the one who stuck up on the Ferris wheel with Murray Hamilton in 1941.
God.
He's got the ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah.
I love Eddie Deason.
I mean, he's working.
Well,
you know?
I mean, he'll continue to work if Zemeckis keeps making movies. Loves him. Zemeckis wrote 1941 and wanted Eddie Deason in it.
I know. I will say, you know what I know him from?
What?
Is he was the voice of Mandark in Dexter's Lab.
Yes, he was. Yes, that's Eddie Deason. Because he's got that voice, he does a lot of voice work.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Oh, I love that guy. I love Eddie Deason. Anyway, he was in this movie called Midnight Madness, where they had to, the scavenger hunt thing. And it was Michael J. Fox, one of Michael J. Fox's first movies. And, yeah. So, you got to love Eddie Deason, man.
I can't love him because he just, in every movie I've seen him in, I know it's on purpose that he's like, he's just got a really annoying voice.
That's what he does in every movie.
I know. I just like, oh, God, I hate when I hear that guy. Because he's always like the really annoying person. He just drives me crazy.
Yeah. You got to love that.
I want to see the Beatles.
Because he's in I Want to Hold Your Hand. He's great in that movie. Eddie Deason, man. Legend.
I think I'm having like war flashbacks right now. It's good Lord.
I love that guy. So anyway, Scavenger Hunt is another one of those stupid knockoffs and Arnold's in there. But I do want to, I want to see him yell at Tony Randall and knock him out a window with a medicine ball. I want to see that now. That's something I would be anxious to watch. The Expendables 3 is considered bad. I don't think I saw The Expendables 3. I think I stopped after 2. I'm pretty sure I stopped after 2. I don't think I saw 3.
Seems like they've stopped being expendable.
Yeah, well, I mean, they keep making them. But who? They had everybody was in that, right?
Yeah,
Statham, right?
Yeah, Statham's in Jet Li, Stallone. I think Kelsey Grammer is one of them.
Right, Kelsey Grammer is in it, right. Jackie Chan? No, Jackie Chan's not in it. No. I'm trying to think of who else is in the Expendable. Dolph Lundgren.
It's just an absurd cast. Here's the original.
The original Expendables, which I did not hate.
No, it's pretty fun. You got Stallone, Statham, Jet Li, Dolph Lundgren, Randy Couture. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Terry Crews, Mickey Rourke, and Bruce Willis.
That's right.
And then it just gets just more and more insane. Like Schwarzenegger shows up, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Norris is in one of them.
Chuck Norris is?
Yeah. I think one of the Hemsworths.
Expendables 3 is what they have here listed. It says, it remains very strange that the greatest action heroes of their generation teamed up to make a trilogy of films together, and all of them were bad. Ralph Fiennes is such a weasel in that movie.
Yeah.
He is such a weasel.
Angela Bassett.
She's unbelievable in it. And Juliette Lewis has never been sexier. I've never found Juliette Lewis to be, like, extraordinarily sexy. My God, in Strange Days. And she sings that PJ Harvey song.
Mm-hmm.
I Can Hardly Wait. Oh.
That's great stuff.
So, anyway, in the late 90s, early 2000s, one of the most interesting periods of Schwarzenegger's career. After a decade on top, his star began to fade. He had some health issues. And then it led to the governor taking his chance with less conventional movies. End of Days falls in the latter category. We mentioned Red Sonja. Red Sonja next on the pretty low on the list. It's a terrible movie. Want to know why Arnold Schwarzenegger hasn't made a Sword and Sandals movie in 35 years? Watch Red Sonja and you'll figure it out pretty quick. Okay, how about this one? Collateral Damage. Oh, Andy Davis. Andy Davis directed Collateral Damage.
Good old Andy.
Here's the thing that I remember about Collateral Damage. It's not very good. And it was one of the movies, one of the three or four films that was taken out of release after 9/11.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because people didn't, you know, it was about stuff blowing up and collateral damage and all that stuff. And people didn't know. Nobody knew what was happening in 2001 when that happened. In the entertainment world, nobody knew what was safe anymore. Like, can we do comedy? Is it okay to do that? In Zoolander, before Zoolander was released, they went in and digitally removed the Twin Towers from the movie. But Glitter came out at the same time. Glitter, you know, the Mariah Carey movie?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so Glitter came out, I think it was about 2 weeks after or a week after 9/11. And in a New York screening, when the camera pulled up and you could see the Twin Towers, the room burst into applause. The entire screening room just burst into applause.
Interesting.
Yeah. But people didn't know what was acceptable in the world of entertainment. There was a Collateral Damage got pulled, and there was a Robert Redford movie. Oh, man. That got pulled from release. I want to say it was called The Last Castle. And those were two movies that were like, okay, we can't release these right now because people don't want to see this kind of stuff. These action movies with these big explosions and stuff.
Yeah, because that was released in October. The Last Castle was released in October.
Right.
So I could see it getting getting pulled.
And also, you know this, right? The teaser poster for Spider-Man.
Oh yeah,
had to be taken down.
Yeah,
because it's his eye. It's Spider-Man's eye, and in the reflection of his eye are the Twin Towers. And it was already hanging up in movie theaters everywhere. Yeah, and the theater owners were told to take him down.
Yeah, and even the teaser trailer for it showed him catching a helicopter in between.
That's right,
the towers.
They pulled that too. Odd. It was just a weird. I mean, obviously, it was an insane time. It was unprecedented. Nobody knew what to do.
Yeah.
But Collateral Damage, I just remember it not being very good, which is unfortunate because I love Andy Davis. So what is it? The Last Stand. Kim Ji Woon, Korean filmmaker, directed it. It was supposed to be a Hollywood comeback for him. Right. He's sheriff, right?
Yeah, he's a sheriff.
Yeah. Boy, that was bad.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're better off dead. There's a gun in your hand that's pointing at your head. You think you're mad, too unstable, kicking your chest.
Second Pet Shop Boys song we've heard this morning. Who requested the Pet Shop Boys?
Pet Shop Boys is coming to us from Dino.
Dino. All right.
Want to hear a little Pet Shop Boys.
Doobie Tuesday, man, here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we're going to simulcast our friends over at Bradley Place. And it's the WGN Early Morning TV News. You'll hear that. And then at 5 o'clock, it's Steve Cochran. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Arnold. Okay, next here, kind of low on the list, Raw Deal. You seen Raw Deal, Tom?
I have not seen Raw Deal.
A lot of it was shot here. But it's not very good. Here's what it says. Rougher around the edges than most of Schwarzenegger's 80s output, which might be considered a plus or minus depending on your point of view. I think it's a plus. A little grit looks good on this kind of B-movie. The plot of Arnold undercover in the mob is about as generic as it comes, but the early scene where Schwarzenegger scolds his drunken wife as she throws a cake at his head. This is one of Arnold's best lines. So this is what happens. Arnold is scolds his wife. His drunk wife throws a cake at his head, and he says, "You should not drink and bake." Which is one of my favorite Arnold lines. Batman and Robin. They say Batman and Robin is better than Collateral Damage and Raw Deal.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Batman and Robin is terrible.
I know, but his performance in it is at least fun, you know?
Here's what the guy who wrote this says. I have no idea how to rank this movie. It's clearly terrible, but I never get sick of watching it for reasons I've never been able to fully explain. And while Schwarzenegger's endless cold puns as Batman, Batty, Mr. Freeze are absurd, I have quoted them constantly for more than 20 years. A look past the cool puns and see Mr. Freeze as the ultimate Schwarzenegger character of this era. A husband who let down his wife and desperately wants to make it right while joking about snow and frost and chills. Yeah, Batman and Robin's not good. Terminator Genesis. Speaking of older men confronting their mistakes, here is a movie where 60-something Schwarzenegger gets into a literal fight to the death with the 30-something version of himself. That's one of the more appealing subtextual elements running through this admittedly less than stellar Terminator sequel. It does at least it does at least some clever variations on the original concept. Shame about all the unresolved cliffhangers, though. I totally forgot that he fought himself in Terminator Genesis. That, I mean, that's like his only scene, right?
No, he does more than that. He's old Terminator. He's Pops.
Right.
And he's in and out of it here and there.
What's the one where he just kind of shows up and he's CGI'd?
That's Salvation.
Oh, right.
And it's not even him. It's like a complete CGI creation. He is not physically in Terminator Salvation. He is physically in the rest of them.
Yeah. Terminator Salvation. And you like that movie.
I like it. I think it's all right.
Man, you're out of your mind.
Why you gotta hurt me?
Like Sinbad and you like Terminator Salvation?
Should I go get my head checked later?
Are you
a doctor's
drinking
appointment?
Christmas juice? What's going on? here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
You're probably going to think I'm queer, too. I liked Kindergarten Cop. I laughed and laughed and laughed.
Lots of people like Kindergarten Cop.
Good. Did you see it?
Yeah. And I didn't like it.
Ouch.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks.
Good night.
Good night. Yeah, Kindergarten Cop. Hey, you know Penelope Ann Miller?
Yeah.
The actress, she's in Kindergarten Cop. She's in Carlito's Way. The Freshman. She was in The Freshman. Which, you still haven't seen that movie, have you?
No, it's on the, I think I'm up to like 12 pages.
Brando. Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
A great movie. Great movie. Anyway, Penelope Ann Miller is in that. And she won the Most Promising Actress Award back when that movie came out from the Chicago Film Critics. And at that time, I was working with the Chicago Film Critics on a regular basis and actually picking up the celebrities from the airport in the car. And I picked her up. Picked up Penelope Ann Miller. And then we had a drink in the hotel bar at the Ambassador East. Yeah, so I got to hang out with her. She was very cool. So we're hanging out, and I gave her some career advice.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, you mentioned
this. Did I tell you this before?
Yeah, you told her to.
Yeah, she said I'm looking at two projects right now. One of them is with Michael Mann, and it's a remake of The Last of the Mohicans. And I don't know if at that time I don't think Daniel Day-Lewis had been cast yet at that time, or maybe he was, and she didn't say anything about that. And then she said, I also got this romantic comedy from Peter Yates called Year of the Comet. And I was like, she's like, yeah, I'm trying to choose between. I said, you should take Year of the Comet. Yates is a great director. Who wants to see Last of the Mohicans? Nobody wants to see Last of the Mohicans anymore. Take Year of the Comet. And she told me it was about this priceless bottle of wine, and it was a really funny script. And I was like, take Year of the Comet. She did. Bombed. Completely bombed.
Can't believe you do that to her.
And Last of the Mohicans was a smash hit and made Madeline Stowe like a superstar. I remember when they both came out, I was like, oh, man. I should never give advice to actors. But I was like, yeah, you should take Year of the Comet. And I'm sure she didn't take Year of the Comet because I told her to. Because why would she listen to some idiot from Chicago who picked her up from the airport? She did it on her own. I take no responsibility for Penelope Ann Miller's career being stalled because of my advice. She talked about working with Arnold. She said he was great. Ike from Country Club Hills texts in, they need to bring back Planet Hollywood somehow. The first and last time I was there was to see the Spice Girls promoting their movie Spice World.
Great moments in Hollywood.
What about The Last Action Hero? Not a fan of that movie. Everybody loves it. I'm not a big fan.
That's a Shane Black, right?
Shane Black. Yeah. John Badham, I believe, directed it, if I'm not mistaken.
It's very meta.
It was meta when meta wasn't meta.
Esmeralda's boyfriend likes that movie quite a
loves
bit.
Loves it.
Loves that movie.
Yeah. Sinbad is funny and very likable. You see that? 847 area code knows the Sinbad.
This is like the Arby's thing. This is just...
Arby's is awesome.
Hurting me.
773, when it rains and the sun is shining, that's me. What does that mean? What is going on there?
Not entirely sure.
Speaking of Sinbad, you forgot Necessary... Oh, yeah! Necessary Roughness! I totally forgot about Necessary Roughness. Have you seen Necessary Roughness?
I have seen Necessary Roughness.
It's good, and Sinbad's good in it. Yeah. We found a good Sinbad movie. Yeah. I forgot about Necessary Roughness. Sinbad doesn't work blue because he's the son of a preacher. Arnold's star began to fade in the early 90s because he realized how kids watched his movies, so he wanted to tone down the violence, hence Last Action Hero, Jingle All the Way, and Junior. He's pregnant in that stupid movie. Hey, it teamed up him and DeVito, though, again. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back and more Arnold, 312-981-7200. Pet Shop Boys, man. I saw them twice in concert in the 80s.
Must have been a wild time.
It was fun. I like the Pet Shop Boys.
They're good. They're good.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Yay! Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. I believe my father made a Two for Tuesday request that we'll have to play after 3:30, right?
Oh, yeah. It's coming up.
Okay.
It's coming up.
All right. So, hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We've been going through all of Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies and ranking them. Matt Singer wrote a piece where he ranked from worst to best the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and we're remembering them. 517 area code says, the one that I like that nobody else seems to is The Last Action Hero. And a lot of people like The Last Action Hero. I think, a lot of people like that movie. 404 area code says, you forgot about Sinbad's appearance and it's always sunny in Philadelphia. All right. Tom doesn't like Sinbad.
You know what? I'll give it to that, because when he shows up in It's Always Sunny, it's a whole thing of self-parody.
Yeah.
And he works blue.
Yeah. Yep.
Ha.
The only time he ever does.
And the whole
time you ever did.
Yeah.
But you can't not work blue if you're on Sunny.
And I just love, because
you're expected to be as blue as possible if you're on an episode of Sunny.
And he's in a mental institution with Rob Thomas.
Exactly. That show rules, man. It still rules.
Oh, yeah.
It still rules.
They've just had one of their best seasons.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. It blew my mind how, I really think the peak of the show still to this day is... about season, like, 3 through 5 are, like, the real peak. But this rivals that, honestly.
No, it's great.
It's the most recent one.
Always remember my ex-wife just coming in the room while I'm watching it going, watch, like, 5 minutes of it. How the hell can you watch a show with these idiots in it? They're the worst. They're the most despicable people on the planet. And I'm like, it's hilarious. Oh, here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Nick.
Hey.
Just wanted to say thanks. Kind of embarrassing. I'm your age. Lived in the Chicago suburbs my whole life, and I never went to Arby's.
Wow.
And I went to an Arby's for the first time about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
One of the best sandwiches I ever had.
There you go. There you go. We got to convince Tom how great Arby's is.
I feel like I've been cheated after, for 55 years. I feel like I've been cheated from Arby's sandwiches.
Yeah, no, that's way too long to have waited to have Arby's, man.
Yeah, I loved it. It was awesome.
Okay. All right, Mark, thanks.
All right.
All right, just calling in to tell me how much he loves Arby's.
the Arby's gang is out here.
Yeah. It's Arby's rules, man. You know, Putty on Seinfeld likes Arby's.
He does. Putty does love Arby's.
Feels like a Arby's night.
Maybe that's what I'll do for everybody Thursday. I'll just come in. I'll bring some Arby's with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see if I can reevaluate Arby's.
Arby's rules, man.
A little horsey sauce on the side.
I mean, it's hard to find an Arby's. That's the issue, is that they're not around anymore. I mean, there's none in the Chicago area. There used to be like two or three of them in the Loop. I don't know if the one in the Merchandise Mart is open, mm-hmm. but that's the one that I used to go to all the time when I took the Brown Line into work. I would always get off at Merchandise Mart, get me an Arby's, and walk to work.
Yeah, I had the Arby's in the in Ogilvy Transit.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I would get the. I remember once for some reason the lines were really long everywhere else that I actually wanted to go. So I was like, well, I'll try Arby's. I've never had an Arby's before. Got the Arby's from there, got on the train, and I was like sweating. Like, it made me feel gross.
It's awesome.
I was like,
Arby's rules.
Listen, I'm surrounded by 50 suburbanites drinking Bud Light on the train.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm sweating from the Arby's sandwich I had. It was not a good time.
I love Arby's. You know what would be best is if I went to Arby's with Sinbad. That would be.
And you guys would be like, you know, my producer, this jackass, you know, he doesn't like you and Arby's. And he'd probably just dunk on me the entire time.
Yeah.
I'd be honored, honestly.
So next on this list here is Maggie. This was the zombie movie that that Arnold tried to attempt a few years ago. Not very good. Now, here's a great movie, Stay Hungry. This is a great movie from 1976, Stay Hungry. Arnold got his first good reviews of his career, plus a Golden Globe for Best Acting Debut in the Bob Rafelson film about a wealthy young man who wants to purchase a gym and unexpectedly falls for one of its employees and becomes friendly with a bodybuilder training for the Mr. Universe contest. Stay Hungry, man. That's Jeff Bridges, Sally Field. It's a good movie. Arnold's great in it, although he's kind of just playing him.
But that works for me.
But he's great in it. Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. I still back this movie, as you know.
Yeah.
I backed Terminator 3.
I mean, I've got it at home. I should just watch it sometime. I don't hate it. It's not that I hate it or anything. I just thought, no, this is a dip in quality.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to follow those first two movies, you know? But we've talked about this already, you know, that whole cherry picker scene, the car chase where they're smashing real buildings. I enjoyed that very much. Though often discounted because of James Cameron and Linda Hamilton's total lack of involvement, Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines features Arnold at his most self-deprecating. Instead of acquiring clothes at a biker hangout, he wanders into a ladies' night at a bar and winds up taking a male stripper's costume. It includes one of the boldest and most depressing endings of any Hollywood blockbuster ever. That's true. End of the world. Next here, Conan the Destroyer. The second Conan has a poorer reputation than it deserves, probably because fans of the grim, bloody original were not expecting a sequel that was a lot closer to a Marvel comic tone. When it's not being compared to the first Conan, though, I think it works pretty well. The action's solid, the fantasy elements are fun, and the comedy is genuinely funny, with Arnold Schwarzenegger's drunken acting a particularly good highlight. Hey, you know, we were just talking about how the ending of Terminator 3 basically is the end of the world.
Yeah.
What other movies end it with the end of the world? Snake Plissken ends the world in L.A.
He does.
Escape from L.A.
Sorts, yeah.
Which is one of my favorite endings ever. It's like who's gonna end the world? Snake Plissken's gonna end the world. If anybody's gonna do it, it's gonna be Snake.
Yeah. And plus he gets to surf in that one.
And shoot basketballs.
Yeah. the tonal difference between Escape from New York and it's like Last Man Standing.
I did too.
I thought that was a pretty cool twist on the whole thing.
Absolutely. I mean the guy's terrific. You ever see Johnny Handsome?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's I mean, I can't, he's made a ton of great movies. He's seriously one of my favorite directors of all time. The man directed The Warriors. He's got a lifetime pass. I mean, he's got a string of movies. You see The Driver with Ryan O'Neal?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. some of the best car chases ever in movie history.
It's what I call the unofficial Driver trilogy. The Driver,
yeah.
Drive,
yeah.
And Baby Driver.
And Baby Driver, yeah. I love the fact that Edgar Wright brought attention to Walter Hill's The Driver because nobody saw that movie. That was a movie made right before The Warriors. Made that movie right before The Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Ryan O'Neill, Bruce Dern.
Yeah. Isabella Gianni.
Yeah.
Characters don't even have names.
Which is great.
Characters have no names.
Very cool.
Yeah. Cop, Driver, those are their names. All right. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll finish up with the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie list here. What's a good one? What's your favorite? 312-981-7200. Are you going to watch Jingle All the Way this holiday season? Tom will, while he's eating Arby's. You can't escape Sinbad from that movie, though. What are you going to do? You're going to get upset? Because
no,
Sinbad's
just,
in it?
You know, I'll just take solace in the fact that I'm watching Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay. You're a weirdo. All right, let's take a break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. That was a Coldplay. My dad picked those for two for two. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're back. And we're here till 4 o'clock, and we have our friends over at Bradley Place simulcast right here from 4 to 5 when you got the first hour of the early morning news on WGN TV. And then at 5 o'clock, our good buddy Steve Cochran will take you on your morning drive for this Tuesday morning. All right, we've been talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger. They've ranked all of his movies from worst to best. He's made 41 films, and we're flying through some of these. And what Arnold movies do you like or do you hate? We're also, and Tom is still getting texts about Arby's. Are the Arby's texts still coming in?
Oh, yeah, we're getting some texts about where there's one in Kenosha.
Uh-huh.
So that's good. Paul says I should try the smoked brisket.
It is good.
You know, that does sound quite nice.
I just like the beef and cheddar. I'm a simple man.
You're a simple kind of man.
I like a beef and cheddar. Beef and cheddar's got the beef. It's got the melted cheddar sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Arby's sauce on a toasted onion roll.
Curly fries on the side?
I'm a potato cake guy.
I like the potato cake.
I like curly fries. I think curly fries are great, but I opt for the potato cake.
Do you get the horsey sauce on there?
Not on the beef and cheddar.
You don't like it on the beef and cheddar?
No. Like on a regular plain, I just like the way the beef and cheddar tastes. I like the sauce and the, you know.
Yeah, I'll take my beef and cheddar neat.
Yeah, exactly. Don't need anything added to the beef and cheddar. The beef and cheddar is my, that's my go-to Arby's sandwich. But I've tried many of their other sandwiches, including the briskets and all that, crazy stuff. I've not had the gyros that they're now advertising.
What, they do gyros
now? They do gyro with actual gyro meat, and they do it with roast beef. They do like a gyro, you know, in a pita, and they do a chicken version.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do they have a Reuben? I guess they have.
Yes, of course they have a Reuben.
Try Reuben.
Yeah. So we're talking Arnold and Arby's. That's the...
that's my favorite combination.
Yeah, so nothing better than Arnold, but you mix it with an Arby's. Yeah. Putty's favorite restaurant. Feels like an Arby's night. Up high.
I think they owe us some advertising dollars here, honestly, if we're being frank.
Yeah. But I don't know about his advertising dollars, because it's kind of an insult to Arby's, because Putty's such a dummy.
That's true.
You know? Yeah. Patrick Warburton is hilarious on that show, on Seinfeld. Hilarious. You know what he was great? The Tick.
Oh, yeah.
He was fantastic on The Tick. So, speaking of Arnold, Eddie Murphy is hosting SNL this week. They're still working on that twin sequel with the two of them and Danny DeVito called Triplets. Yeah, that doesn't sound like a disaster at all. Oh my God. Why?
Why right. not?
I'm not a fan of twins. I don't think twins is funny. I mean, it's one joke. Oh, look, he's really big. He's really small. They're twins. Ha, 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 ha. Not a fan. Although I like, what's her name? She played a Nancy in Sid and Nancy. Chloe Webb?
Chloe Webb. Let's see.
So who's the other female lead in Twins? Because it's Chloe Webb, or who, I can't remember, maybe it's not, that's not her name, but it's the girl who played Nancy in Sid and Nancy, who I really like. I liked her in Twins, but I can't remember who the other female.
Yeah, Chloe Webb and Bonnie Bartlett. Kelly Preston.
Yeah, that's right, Kelly Preston.
Kelly Preston.
Yeah. Yeah, Twins. You like Twins?
Not really.
No.
It's fine.
How about the next one? Junior, where they reunite Danny DeVito and Ivan Reitman. And he's pregnant. See, get it? Arnold's pregnant. I think Emma Thompson is in that movie. Can you look that up? I think Emma Thompson is in Junior.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's in that. She is in that.
And it's one of those wacky posters.
Yeah.
It's like a wacky poster. We're like, I'm pregnant.
Yeah. Arnold looking into, the audience with his big pregnant belly.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito's got a little bit, kind of a cheeky smile. Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
Around his shoulder. And the tagline, nothing is inconceivable.
Oh, my God. Junior.
Woof.
Although it was intended to be a spiritual sequel to the shockingly popular comedy Twins, with Ivan Reitman directing Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, Junior is not especially funny, and on that level, at least, it must be considered a failure. But Junior is also a strange film. It's hard to discount it entirely. It features Schwarzenegger as a fertility specialist who impregnates himself as part of a scheme to get a drug approved by the FDA. And that's literally the least weird part about it. Scholars and culture critics who love to write about gender politics in popular 90s rom-coms really need to check out Junior and have their minds blown.
Schwarzenegger and Thompson received Golden Globe Award nominations.
Come on.
For those performances. Wow.
More validity to the Golden Globes.
Yeah, the Hollywood Foreign Press is really, they're batting 1,000.
How about The Sixth Day?
This was a weird movie.
I don't even remember it. It came out in the year 2000. I don't remember it. Who directed it?
It's Roger Spottiswoode.
Oh, okay. He's a good director.
Yeah, it's a really strange movie.
I swear to you, I don't even remember it.
He's like cloned. It's like a clone movie.
Okay.
And the title specifically refers to like, and on the sixth day.
Uh-huh.
And he created, because that's when he created Mankind. And then it's also Terry Crews' acting debut.
What?
Yeah, Terry Crews is in it.
This was his debut?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the next one on the list I'm a big fan of. And I think ranking at 16 is a little too low, quite frankly. I love Eraser. I love that movie. And if I want, I want to say, God, who directed it? Mark something.
It was directed by Chuck Russell.
Chuck Russell.
Yeah.
The great Chuck Russell. No wonder I like it.
James Caan's in it. James Coburn.
It's a great movie. And it's got a fantastic shootout involving alligators. Like, they're in a room with a bunch of tanks filled with water and alligators, and they start shooting the tanks, and the alligators are running around eating people while there's a shootout going on. I love them. I love Eraser. Just before Schwarzenegger started tweaking his on-screen persona, he made one last-by-the-numbers adventure movie about a U.S. Marshal protecting a witness who uncovers an illegal arms deal. By this point in his career, Arnold could play this kind of character in his sleep, which he basically does here. Still, there's something to be said for any movie in which a man falls out of an airplane without a parachute, retrieves a parachute midair, puts it on, and then plays a game of chicken with a plane. Another great scene. I love that. I really love that movie. It's just so ridiculous.
I don't know if it's as good as Chuck Russell's, 2016 effort with John Travolta.
I don't even remember.
I Am Wrath.
Oh. Okay.
Do you remember that?
No.
Did you ever see that?
No.
Oh, it's bad.
No. Chuck Russell's directed some good movies, though.
Oh, he definitely has.
Yeah.
Definitely has. Like the Blob remake.
Remake is great.
Nightmare 3, Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Mm-hmm.
No. The Mask.
How about this? The Villain. This I remember when this movie came out, when The Villain came out. It's a Kirk Douglas wacky comedy. And it's Hal Needham directed it. The guy, the auteur behind the Smokey and the Bandit movies. You know, Hal Needham only had a film career because of Burt.
Yeah.
Because of Burt Reynolds. Yeah. Because Hal Needham was a stunt coordinator and a stuntman. And then Burt was like, why don't you direct a movie? And then he directed Smokey and the Bandit. Smokey and the Bandit was second only to Star Wars the year it came out at box office. Hal Needham did direct a really good movie, though. He directed a movie called Hooper with Burt Reynolds and Jan Michael Vincent. And it was about stuntmen. So that's why it's good, because it's like...
lived experience.
Exactly. But The Villain was his attempt to do kind of airplane-ish comedy. Like wacky, cartoony, airplane-ish comedy.
Well, yeah. I mean, Anne Margaret, Foster Brooks.
Foster Brooks, man.
Strother Martin.
The great Strother Martin. I love Strother Martin. His opening scene in Up in Smoke is one of my favorite. The only scene he's in Up in Smoke is one of my favorite scenes in film history. You get a job before sundown, or we're shipping you off to military school with the Finkelstein crap kid. Son of a bitch. The fact that they cast Strother Martin as Tommy Chong's dad is just the... Well, everybody was high when they made that movie.
Yeah, it goes without saying.
That's the thing about Up in Smoke. It's still the best Cheech and Chong movie. And I have an affinity for Cheech and Chong movies. I grew up, I was a teenager, I was in high school when those movies came out. When I was in high school, there were three types of movies. There were the teen sex comedies, the booby teen sex comedies that came out every week. There was a new one. Slasher movies that were named after different holidays every week. And Cheech and Chong. Those were the three kinds of movies that were hugely popular when I was in high school. And Up in Smoke remains one of the, I mean, it's a classic. I mean, like, the first hour of Up in Smoke particularly is like genius. And I don't know how they captured, because if they were high, if everybody on that set was high, which is a very strong possibility, how in God's name did they make a movie that captured it so perfectly? Or if they weren't high, they were like, okay, let's do this straight so that we can show people what it's like to be completely baked. So I don't know. I suspect they were high, and they just struck gold. Lou Adler directed it. He was their agent. Never directed a movie before. The camera, he didn't know where to put the camera. Tom Skerritt's in it. I mean...
One of those little miracles.
Oh, it's just... Oh, God, I remember the first time I saw it. They play Lowrider at the beginning of the movie. He pees in the hamper. He puts his foot in a bowl of cereal. There's kids all over the place. When Cheech is getting up, then he pees in the hamper. He thinks it's the toilet. He's peeing in the hamper. I'm nine, man. I laugh so hard at that movie. Hey, man, am I driving okay? Hey, man, I think we're parked. Oh, no, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I've never had no acid, man. All right, let's break here. I'll give you some weather, and there you go. Today, the skies are going to clear. Storm system heads out to the east coast. We'll have some lingering clouds. Abundant sunshine will raise the temperature to low 30s in the afternoon, and then some polar air will send the suburban temps down to around 10 degrees. The city will get down to in the low teens. Tomorrow, the coldest day of the week, settles across the Midwest. Sub-zero wind chills ease as temperatures rise to the low 20s in the evening. And then Thursday, a warm-up begins, passing high clouds, otherwise sunny. Temperatures will rise from 20 early to late-day highs of near 40. Friday, peaks of filtered sun will emerge. Temperatures will top out the low to mid-40s, partial clearing overnight. And for Saturday, partly sunny, continued breezy. Afternoon temperatures approach 50 degrees, which is 15 degrees above normal. It's currently 23 degrees at O'Hare, 27 at Midway, 27 at the lakefront. All right, let's take our final break here. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie talk right after this on WGN. requested the Otis.
It's coming to us from Mike.
All right, Mike.
Yeah!
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after 4 o'clock, our friends over at Bradley Place will be simulcast right here on WGN as part of the WGN Early Morning TV News. And then Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 5. And the news, by the way, is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Back to the Arnold talk. We were at the 41 Arnold Schwarzenegger movies have been made, and a man named Matt Singer ranked them all from worst to best, and we're climbing up that list and talking about Arnold movies, some of which I don't... There are a few here that we've talked about that I don't even... almost kind of don't even remember. So... I don't know. All right. So we were talking about The Villain, which is a wacky slapstick comedy. And I remember it came out summer 1979. Summer 1979 was an interesting summer because I was about to go into high school. I was going from eighth grade into high school. It's the summer that Phantasm came out. Well, Phantasm came out in the spring, but I saw it in the summer over 100 times in the theater. And again, not an exaggeration. I remember Moonraker was the Bond movie that came out that year, that summer. And I remember The Villain. I remember Nightwing. You ever seen Nightwing?
Nightwing.
Yeah, it's a movie about bats. David Warner was in it. Nick Mancuso.
Oh, wow.
Arthur Hiller directed it.
Do the bats attack?
Man, bats.
Bat attack.
And it had something to do with Native American. There was like a Native American subplot or curse or something.
Okay.
And also the summer of, speaking of that, also summer that summer of 79, Prophecy. One of the worst movies ever made, and I saw it multiple times, just so I could see Phantasm.
They get you with those double features.
They used to have the double features, and Phantasm was paired up with Prophecy at a bunch of different theaters throughout that summer. So I'd go see Phantasm, I'd sit through Prophecy, it's just so I could sit through Phantasm again. So I saw Prophecy like 20 times in the theater. I told Don Coscarelli that. You made me sit through Prophecy. He goes, I didn't make you do anything.
So. Did you at least like maybe nap in the back or something?
Oh, no, I would not pay attention. You know, you know, I didn't nap. I would sit there and watch it, you know. But, yeah, it was weird. It was a weird sort of like transitional time for me. And I remember all those movies that came out in 79. So that was The Villain, which was a really stupid movie. Even I was only 14 when that movie came out. And I was like, this is dumb. So next on the Arnold list is Terminator Dark Fate.
Not bad.
I really enjoyed it. I don't care. I know it tanked at the box office, didn't make any money. This is the latest Terminator movie. I think he's particularly good in it. He's not in it a lot. He doesn't show up till about halfway, a little more than halfway through the movie. Number 13 on this list is Twins. This is how he writes about it. See, it's funny because Arnold Schwarzenegger is big and tall and Danny DeVito is very short and out of shape. That's it. That's the joke. That's Twins. Escape Plan from a few years ago with him and Stallone in a prison, like a modern weird setup prison.
Yeah, like a big glass prison.
Yeah.
Two sequels to that, but Arnie's not in them.
Is
Stallone and Dave Bautista.
Oh, right. Dave Bautista. You know, he's getting inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year.
Good. Absolutely.
Bautista.
As well he should.
Yeah. And you know, who else is somebody? They announced somebody else getting inducted. Is it the Four Horsemen? The Four Horsemen have to be in already, right?
Let's see.
The Four Horsemen have to be in the Hall of Fame already. They have to be. I mean, I know individually they're in, but they have to be in as the Four Horsemen, right?
Yeah. So, oh man. So is he getting inducted in 2020, right?
Yeah, in April. It always is. It's during WrestleMania weekend, and they're just slowly starting to announce the inductees.
Yeah. So right for 2020 confirmed is Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
And New World Order.
Oh, New World. That's what it is. Yeah. NWO. That's what it is. So the Four Horsemen are obviously already in. They, you know, if you got a Wrestling Hall of Fame and the Four Horsemen aren't in yet, there's something wrong with your Hall of Fame. Yeah, NWO, that's pretty cool. Have you ever, I know you were really, really young when the NWO took over the WCW. Have you ever gone back and looked at that heel turn? Have you ever gone back and watched Hulk Hogan do the heel turn?
Yeah.
It's the greatest heel turn in the history of in the history of professional wrestling.
It's nuts, though.
It's unbelievable. When the amount of garbage that was being thrown from the crowd into the ring when Nash and Scott Steiner and Hogan were in the ring forming the NWO. I mean, I'm telling you, I remember watching it, and when Hogan turned heel, I went, "You got to be kidding me!"
It was Scott Hall, wasn't it?
Scott Hall, yeah, Scott Hall. Oh no, Steiner. I'm sorry, Scott Hall. Yeah, but yeah, no, that was the greatest heel turn in the history of wrestling. It's still classic. I go back and watch it every once in a while just because it's so unbelievable. The crowd goes nuts. They go nuts. Genius move on the part of Bischoff. Genius. And that's when they were stomping WWF. So, all right, Kindergarten Cop comes in at 11. Pumping Iron comes in at 10. You ever see Pumping Iron?
Yeah, no, great documentary.
It is fantastic. This is kind of crazy high, don't you think? Running Man at number 9?
Oh, I like the Running Man. That's a pretty iconic Arnie.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's one where he's like, I'm going to ram my fist into your stomach and pull out your spine.
I just remember I loved Richard Dawson in it. Richard Dawson is fantastic in that movie. Conan the Barbarian comes in at number 8. Number 7, Last Action Hero. That's pretty high for Last Action Hero. Number 6, Commando. Now, your favorite is next. It comes in at number 5. Your favorite is Predator.
Yeah.
That's your favorite Arnold movie?
My most watched movie of 2018 was Predator.
Your most watched movie of 2018?
Was Predator.
Why?
Because they put it out on 4K Blu-ray. And so I watched it like every day for an entire year.
McTiernan directed that movie,
yeah,
right? Oh,
yeah.
No, he directed Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
McTiernan directed.
Yeah, because it was the 1-2 punch. He did Predator and then followed it up with Die Hard the next year.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
That's pretty great.
That's pretty
1-2 punch.
Number 4, True Lies. Not a fan. I like Jamie Lee Curtis quite a bit.
Does he fire a guy off of a F-14?
Yeah. Oh, it's ridiculous. and the terrorist stereotypes. It's basically kind of a racist movie.
Yeah.
Number 3, Terminator, which is my favorite Arnold movie. I would put Terminator at number 1. Number 2, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. And then they say number 1 is Total Recall.
Don't know about that. That doesn't mean, I mean, we like Total Recall.
I love Total Recall.
It's great.
It's not better than Terminator.
No. Although Terminator does not have a woman with 3 breasts.
No, so it doesn't.
Maybe that's why
no, it doesn't.
They chose that.
No, it doesn't. And it also doesn't have Arnold going with his eyes bugging out. So, how was there not permanent damage to Arnold when he was on Mars sucking in no air?
I don't know, man.
Because his head expands, his eyes bug out of his face, and then he's fine. He and Rachel Tickerton are just standing there looking at the sun. All right. I'm trying to find logic in Total Recall.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea.
What's the name of the creature in the dude's stomach?
Oh, God. I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about, but I couldn't tell you what the name of it was.
Quote, something with a Q, U.
Quato.
Quato, that's it. Quato.
I'm Quato.
All right, we got a break. We'll be right back. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We got the WGN-TV Morning News coming up. Beverly Gray will join me tomorrow from Beverly and Movieland. We got Wildcard Wednesday and Know Your Onion.